Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of the Rick Emerson Show is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
I'd like to discuss why we hear so much talk about the First Amendment coming out of this building, but no talk at all about the First Commandment. The First Commandment says, honor thy father.
No, it doesn't.
Toby.
It doesn't.
Listen to
me. No, if I'm going to make you sit through this preposterous exercise, we're going to get the names of the damn commandments right.
Okay, here we go.
Honor thy father is the third commandment.
Then what's the First Commandment?
I am the Lord your God. Thou shalt worship no other God before me.
Good afternoon, Mr. President.
Al, how many times have I asked you to denounce the practices of a fringe group that calls itself the Lambs of God?
Oh, sir, that's not up to me.
Crap, it is up to you, Al. Seems my granddaughter Annie had given an interview in one of those teen magazines, and somewhere between movie stars and makeup tips, she talked about her feelings on a woman's right to choose. Now, Annie, all of 12, has always been precocious, but she's got a good head on her shoulders, and I like it when she uses it, so I couldn't understand it when her mother called me in tears yesterday. I said, Elizabeth, what's wrong? She said, it's Annie. Now, I love my family, and I've read my Bible from cover to cover, so I want you to tell me, from what part of Holy Scripture do you suppose the Lambs of God drew their divine inspiration when they sent my 12-year-old granddaughter a Raggedy Ann doll with a knife stuck through its throat? You'll denounce these people, Al. You'll do it publicly. And until you do, you can all get your fat asses out of my White House.
It is 29 minutes after the hour of 1, and this is the month of February in the year of our Lord 2011. Thank you for coming by, making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district here in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon, the home of all good things. Dawn looks really confused right now. It's like she's misplaced something or can't find a crucial piece of paper. Everybody stare.
Stop looking at me.
What have you lost, Dawn?
I was looking for what I did with the taser watch and the penis watch.
I'm sure it'll turn up.
It's got to be here somewhere.
I figured I would just stop everything and just gaze at you fixedly until it...
No, don't slow the show down. All keep right. It rolling. It's like a jet plane. If you don't get it moving fast enough at the beginning, it won't actually take off into the sky.
It's like some sort of a radio shark that must keep moving to preserve its life force.
Yes.
All right. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. If you'd like to engage with us telephonically today, by God, you can do it. It's 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. That number good from anywhere on planet Earth. You can also message us via Skype if you like. Or, you can... Skype is so confusing. It's one of those things that it's difficult to use as a verb because it means several things. You can actually use it as just a regular phone. Like, you can just call the number, and then it rings through via Skype. Or you can do that creepy thing that Aaron does where it's like he's in the room with us. And then he can also use it as like a text messaging thing. So it becomes all kinds of confusing because Skype has no definitive meaning in a verbal sense.
And you could use it as an exclamation if you drop something heavy on your foot. You go, Skype! Skype!
Doesn't Skype sound like something that sort of like a Russian knockoff of the Tick would shout as he was headed toward a car?
It sounds like it ought to be something, some kind of a booze.
Like
you're drinking Skype. Maybe I missed because there was there is Sky Vodka, but it'd be something you would make with Sky Vodka and and tobacco squeezins or something.
Squeezins. Awesome. it is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-505-6964. If you would like to get on board with your comments, questions, clarifications, observations, ruminations, ponderings, musings of an ironic nature, whatever it is you might have. Is that the Vizo Vigor over there?
Yes,
a little tart there.
Yeah, I
a little tang.
I opened the wrong Vizo. I opened your Vizo
instead of
my Vizo.
I wasn't going to comment on
and
that.
And I was expecting Will, and I got a big mouthful of Vigor, and I was not expecting it.
Okay.
So I'm sorry I broke into your Vigor.
All right.
It has my mouth cooties on it. Do you still want it?
Well, but let's not get ahead of ourselves. Well, yes.
I only took the one sip of it.
The short answer is yes, but the follow-up question then is, do you actually have a Will somewhere in the fridge? Because then
I do.
Was to deny you.
No, I do. I picked up the wrong Vizo when I went to the fridge. So hold on a second.
Are you really just leaving the studio now and you can... All right. I'll just amuse myself. No, don't worry about it. I'll just stay right here. Yeah, don't worry about it. No, I'll just hang out here. Yep. Yeah.
I got my one now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We can have a big show.
Oh, I'm sorry. Are you ready?
Okay.
All right. Yeah. Excellent. All right. Do you have to open the Vizo and actually get it?
There we go.
I appreciate you you putting mine back in the fridge. Thank you.
Well, yeah. Oh, there we go.
That's
what I expected.
Feeling better?
Yes.
Okay, excellent. It's so confusing. Skype apparently does video conferencing, conference calls, and screen sharing. All right, now I just want to take it off my computer for fear that it's going to do something. It's like we've talked about this before, but just like I had that... I mean, at first it was Yelp, and then it was something else. I took Yelp off just because I never used it, but there was something else I put on, and it was like, it constantly wanted to know where I was. It was just like, can we tell everybody your location? I'm like, no. I mean, for no real reason. I just say no to things like that. It's like when Facebook asks me if it can access something new. It's like, unless I have a real pressing reason, I just default to disallowing it.
It's actually surprising how many people are okay with that. And that, like, on the iPhone and stuff, you can look at like, Facebook and say, you know, where are people I know right now? And there'll be these things. And you're like, oh, it was 14 hours ago. They're not actually there right now.
Or if there was a photo taken somewhere. Like, if somebody has a photo online, it'll tell you where they were when they took the photograph, which, again, doesn't matter to me. But it does seem like one of those things. Like, if you are a private detective, you are a flatfoot, a gumshoe, a private dick, it seems like that's one of those things that's going to turn up in a divorce hearing sooner rather than later. Is the guy's going to say, well, you say that you were at work, and yet, and then they'll go to, like, your Google Map or something, and it'll show that you put up a photo, and it'll say that you were, you know, downtown getting your basket weaved, when you claimed that you were hard at work. All right, it's 503-505-6964. That is the telephone number there. You can also email if you like. It's Rick at rickemerson.com. Rick@rickemerson.com. Don Taylor can be reached. It's Don, D-A-W-N, at rickemerson.com. Or, again, you can message us via Skype if you like. It's Rick Emerson Show and the text box open on the website as well. Coming up today, Corpse Watch, Taser Watch, Penis Watch, also a Darwin Watch. Yes, an ad hoc sort of a Darwin Watch. It just came up.
Yes.
So we got your Corpse Watch, Taser Watch, Penis Watch, Darwin Watch, Week in Geek with Mr. Aaron Duran. Going to be coming up around 15 minutes, including some Zod news. I will resist the urge to call this a Zodcast.
Oh, good.
Also, I think I'm probably too late to register Zodcast.com, but, you know, somebody out there has probably done that. Ryan White, music editor from the Oregonian, is going to join us, and we'll count down Don Taylor's top five songs that are used to put you in show mode, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are these the top five songs, top five artists?
No, in one or two cases it's artists, but really it's songs. It's almost entirely songs.
Top five songs that Don Taylor uses to put an extra dip in her hip, spring in her step, pre-show mode. Don Taylor herself is also tracking the following headlines for you on this Monday.
We had the Oscars last night. Charlie Sheen is still full of crazy.
Yeah.
And a crying toddler gets stuck in a bank vault.
Excellent. Let's see what else. Somebody just starts off the program by emailing this question. They say, Don, does Rick smell like a chick today?
I don't know.
Do I smell like a chick other days?
I think they were talking about that hand lotion incident we had last week.
Well, that and the whole that I'm still using the Toms of Maine antiperspirant deodorant because it's like I paid for it. And because it's Toms of Maine, it was like $75. But now what I do is I put the Toms of Maine on. I don't even know why I'm using it because I put the Toms of Maine on and then I just put a layer of my wife's deodorant on over it.
Here's how crazy I am about this stuff. I actually was running around a lot. So I had to get up this morning and drive Patrick to work really, really early. He had to start work at like 6:30 this morning. And we had agreed ahead of time that he would just walk to work and then not bother me, except that it was pouring down rain this morning. It was raining so hard So he like I woke up at like 6:15 with him poking me.
Hey,
and going, I'm sorry. I'm really sorry, but it's
I know
really
you asked me not to talk to you or engage with you in any way.
Okay, so I threw on pants and drove him to work, and then came home and got back into bed. And I don't know if it was because I got up and was doing stuff and then went back to bed or what. When I got ready for work, I was getting dressed and doing stuff, and I caught a whiff of myself, and I had like this armpit-y smell. And I took a shower last night before bed, and usually that's not usual, but I was like, oh my God. And so I had this thing. We've talked a lot about like our
not
obsession
to
with
offend.
Order, where I like had to decide at that moment, like split second, do I trust that the antiperspirant deodorant will cover this smell that already existed, or do I go into the bathroom and scrub under my armpits before I put on deodorant?
Now, was taking a whole shower out of the question?
Yeah, I didn't have time.
All right. So you were, but you might have, you were thinking about maybe doing the thing with the washcloth.
Right.
And just scrub out your armpits.
And then I went, and then I decided that the compromise was just to trust that the Degree antiperspirant deodorant would mask any smell, and also just like not raise my arms in the vicinity of other people.
I have totally done that. I've done the thing where I walk through the hole and it's like I'm just all clenched up. And it's like I look like I have little T-Rex arms all day because I just got because I'm trying to keep my shoulders closed, you know, my armpits closed so that nothing escapes because I kind of trust science. But it's not that I don't trust science. That's the wrong way to put it. It's that I have faith in science, but I also have faith in my own my body's ability to stink. That's the thing. It's like you realize that it is almost two different forms of nature engaged in combat, like Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla. One is the power of aluminum stearate, and the other is the power of just, you know, your stink.
Well, I also have this thing. I overcompensate for being fat by being well-groomed and always smelling okay. And so I'm completely paranoid. I'm so paranoid about smelling bad because it's one thing to just smell it. And we've talked about that whole thing about, like, how unattractive it is on chicks when they smell, you know, all sweaty and stuff and armpity. But it's another thing to be, like, a fat person who smells like armpity. And so it's like, I am not going to... And it's bad enough that I tend to be kind of sweaty, usually without being stinky, but I'm kind of sweaty because I have been ever since I was a kid, and even when I was slender. I'm just one of those people that my body goes, okay, we need to vent for the heat now. You know, like, it's square dancing day at school, and Dawn is, like, drenched in sweat. So, so I just try to, like, overcompensate by, like, dressing decently and wearing makeup and making sure and worrying constantly about like offending people with any odor at all.
Do you ever do this? Well, let me.
As if I'm not even human. Like if I could just like take plastic and hermetically seal up all of my smelly, potentially smelly parts, I would.
I think you can. I mean, I think you would die. I think you would asphyxiate in your own. I think that everything would back up is the issue. I think you could actually just seal off under your armpits, but I suspect that then you would just spend a lot of time getting larger. You would just sort of go, and you'd be like, "What? I don't understand." And it would just be backing up into you like some sort of a water balloon.
You'd probably get moldy.
Yeah, you don't want that. Well, it's like they sell. Have you ever been tempted to buy one of those things they sell like in Parade magazine where it's like a rock you put underneath your armpit or something and then it supposedly just stops you from sweating?
I guess, except I don't believe that they
no,
really
see, it
work.
Can't possibly work. The other thing is
they're like sea sponge menstrual pads and things. I just go, no, no.
Sea sponge menstrual pads.
Yeah. They're just some things that are, and they try to convince you that it's all natural and good for you and reusable. And then it's like,
reusable?
No. Yes. Okay. Oh, yes.
Okay. Just beat your clothes on a rock down by the river?
No, you use them essentially the same way you would use, like, I guess a tampon, except then you're, like, cleaning them out and
wringing it out?
Yeah, and it's like, ah.
Oh, no.
This is why hippies smell.
Seriously. No, you don't want to. And see, that's one of those things where I don't mind the fact that it's going into a landfill. You know? It's
just
it's like with a Band-Aid. You know, it'd be like having a reusable band. And I know there's, like, Ace bandages or, you know, gauze or whatever.
Yeah.
But you know what? Hospitals don't reuse that. You know, why? Just throw that out.
I feel a lot better about landfills, too, after that Freakonomics thing about the cities and the landfills.
Yeah.
And the one about the trash.
Yep.
And him going, oh, yeah, the people who deal with landfills, oh, yeah, we got plenty of room. They want landfills. They like landfills. It fills in stuff.
I've been
it's
saying
useful.
That forever. No, it's like you go to just drive through Wyoming. Does it look like we got a lot of, building spring? Does it look like we're short on space? Yeah. No.
So I don't actually feel so bad about
See,
that now.
You're coming around to my side of things. It's just sort of a, meh.
We dump stuff in holes, we build things on top of it, and it's all good.
We're fine. Well, now we're just so totally off point. By the way, apparently just cleaning underneath your armpit with a washcloth is called a hooker bath.
Oh, all right.
Somebody wants you to know that.
I thought you had to do your crotch. while you were standing in front of the sink for it to be a hooker bath?
Well, I think that depends on what kind of service you offer.
No.
I suppose maybe if you're a full-service prostitute, then perhaps you need to take off your underthings and wash your ass.
But my mother referred to that as a prostitute bath, was when you just wash your those three areas in standing in front of the sink.
Okay. Just the armpit, teeth, and crotch wash.
That's teeth.
Yeah. Well, again,
kissing anybody.
I guess it depends on what your your area of expertise is as a working girl. Here's the thing: I had the worst, most revolting story to tell, and now here's the thing: I either think that I should because the bar has just been raised or lowered, depending on how you look at it, or I shouldn't because the bar has been raised or lowered, depending on how you look at it. I don't even know. I don't even. Okay, well, let me just stop before we do anything else. I'll just say a couple of things. Two things about sweat. One. Have I done all of the other stuff? Yeah, so I mentioned what's coming up, and E.H. Vending's going to... We're going to have clue number one for this week's Name That Snack Contest. Also, Ryan White, Weekend Geek, Penis Watch, Taser Watch, Corpse Watch, Darwin Watch. Here's two more things about stinking. One, did you ever take a shower at night, and then it's like you forget to put on antiperspirant or deodorant or something, which I don't do that often, but every now and again, and then I'm in bed, and I go, oh, damn, and then I just took a shower. I forgot to put on deodorant. I'll be fine. And then I just go to sleep, and I wake up the next morning, and it's like, and then you just smell, and you're like, well, I wasn't, you know, and it's like, if you just go straight to bed, wake up the next morning, you're like, okay, there's no reason why I should stink, and then you do.
That was this morning for me, yeah, absolutely.
And then you wonder, like, what is it that my body's doing while I'm asleep? What possible reason is there? Why should I reek? And, you know, and there's no reason for it, yet it is so.
I mean, it's not like I ate some kind of giant roasted garlic pizza last night or something.
Yeah, or just,
you know, something that would cause smell to ooze from my body.
Deep knee bends or something in your sleep. There's no reason. And then the second thing, and everybody's had this experience, and I don't mean to gross anybody out, but everybody's done this. Have you ever worked with somebody where it's like they would get up out of a chair, and it's like the chair just reeked of them, and then you would sit in the chair afterward, and you wouldn't realize it until it was too late, and you go, oh, God, oh, and then you just get up, and it's like you just smell like Ted from accounting for the rest of the day.
I worry about that, sharing the chair with Sarah sometimes. I worry that I'm going to leave some kind of Dawn chair smell.
No, I've worked with guys like that, and it has been guys every time, where it's like you would just sit, and it's like, not like in the cubicle or something, it'd be like in the kitchen or maybe in the conference room. There's some sort of communal area, like a shared area, and you'll sit down in the chair to be doing whatever it is you're doing, and then you kind of just, you sense that funk in the air. Where's it coming? Is it around me? Oh, and then you look down, and it's just sort of like, you get the alien sort of, that's inside the room, sort of a thing. And you realize you were sitting. I used to work with this guy named Dwayne, and goddamn, he was just a load on 2 feet. He was just the worst human being who's ever existed. And he explained to me at one point, first of all, he walked to work every day through a field in the sun. It was like he lived like 2 miles from the radio station, and he was just... He looked like Sloth from the Goonies, but like without the bendy ears and charm and charisma and merchandising appeal. And so he would just walk to work. This is during the summer. He only worked for the station for like 3 months. He would walk to work, and he would walk through a field in the summer, and when it was like, you know, 94 degrees, and he would just, and he smelled, I swear to God, he smelled so bad. We had him ensconced in this little... It wasn't the door... There was no door on the room, but the room was at the back of the building. It was like you walked in the front door, and it was all the way in the back, man. And I swear to God, you could smell him in the lobby of the building. People would walk in. They'd come by to pick up a prize or a T-shirt or something, and, yeah, I'm here to pick up my T-shirt. And it's like they were just re-wrinkling their nose, wondering, you know, who it was had the disgusting... You could smell him all the way to the front. And it was like, so he would just be sweating and walking through this field and just reeking. And I finally, and the general manager actually at one point pulled me, the general manager, who I swear to God, didn't ever call him Dwayne. The general manager called him Stinky. Go, so what's up with Stinky back there in the production room? And I'd say, I don't know. He walks to work. And he would just go, you got to do something about that. And that's one of those moments when working in management kind of sucks. You know, because it's like, I don't like to fire people. And that always, you know, I had to do that occasionally. That was never fun. And then we have to call a guy into the office and go like, hey, dude, you know, you smell like the inside of an ass. Like, what is your... And so I finally just pulled him in and I said, Dwayne, look, it's summertime. And so I know that, you know, we're all working in close quarters. And hey, you know, radio people, we're not the cleanest guys on earth anyway. So just, you know, I don't know if like you're just, you know, Maybe you wore the same shirt 2 days in a row. I don't know what it was. Maybe it looked like another shirt. You thought it was clean, but kind of smelled. And I don't think I said he smelled. I think I tried to put it on the laundry. Said, I think maybe you're, maybe you wore the shirt yesterday or something. It's just, just kind of has that, like you wore it 2 days in a row kind of smell. So, just maybe, make sure you're wearing something, a clean shirt. Because we all have to, sort of work. It's like being in a submarine. We have to sort of, make sure that we can be in close quarters together. Trying to just, lay between the lines. You exude a stench that no man should have to endure. And he actually said to me, he swore to God, he swore to me that he was allergic to soap. He told me he was allergic to soap. And it's like, where are you supposed to go from there? There's no, that is the end of the conversation. Mm-hmm. There is nowhere you can go because you can't then insist that he use it anyway.
Was this before the invention of the soap-free body washes?
Well, there was no Purell or anything to my knowledge. This was 95, 96.
Okay, yeah.
I don't think we'd become quite so, it was before the arsenic or the anthrax poisonings and everybody came all freaked out about touching anything. And it was before, there's no swine flu or anything in the public consciousness. And so he just said he's allergic to soap, and I just went, okay then, all right, thanks, I guess we're done, because there's nowhere. I don't think we could have forced him to quit, because then it becomes a whole HR health, we're violating his rights issue. And so eventually, I can't remember if he actually was fired or if he quit. I think that he eventually quit because he could sort of sense the writing on the wall. He knew that we were going to find a way to squeeze him out anyway. So I think he may have just left at some point. But I remember just telling the general manager, because he actually goes, "So what happened with Stinky?" And I just said, "He's allergic to soap." And then we both just sat there in the office, the GM and I, and there was a vapor lock for 5 minutes, and we just went, "Okay." And I just left, and he just shrugged, and that was it. And then we realized there was nothing else I could do. So there you go,
the end.
Well, we've talked at length about the whole gamer funk thing, and I remember complimenting Angel, the owner of Guardian Games. I told her once, congratulating her on how they have a good ventilation system. And I said, doesn't seem as bad there. And the thing is, I think it's the big difference with a woman-owned business. She said, "Oh yeah, no, we have deodorant behind the counter, and we're not shy about just picking it up and slamming it on the counter."
Wow.
And going, "Here, dude, use this."
Good for them. Well done. Angel and Michelle don't want no funk. No, sir. My only other thing about is scrubbing your underarms with a washcloth. And what a classy show we are today. Hello. Welcome to the first. We started.
Hello, new listeners.
Well, we ended last week by talking about periods. And so now today it's just, we're moving to a slightly different area and slightly different function of the body. I did see this morning we have several new listeners, so greetings to you. This is, in fact, wholly representative of what we do. So if you hear that news thing we do from noon to one over Cascadia, and you think to yourself, well, they're a little edgy during the news, I'm sure the rest of the day they don't get away with this sort of chicanery and blue language. We do, in fact. Here's the thing about scrubbing underneath your arms. Did you ever notice that you can get in the shower and you can just use the washcloth and the whatever and you just get your scrub on and it's fine? But if you just do it standing in front of the sink, you chafe yourself something fierce. What is that about?
I don't know. If it's just a matter of you're in the shower long enough that your skin kind of softens up and becomes more supple.
Or there's more water kind of flowing over you all the time. Maybe you use more soap.
There's also the thing that cleaning yourself in front of the sink, you never seem to rinse the soap off.
That's the other thing. No, and then you lean forward and you're having to splash handfuls of water underneath your arms.
Yeah.
And then it's just, and then you realize at the end of it, you should have just gotten in the goddamn shower because it takes you forever to get the soap out from underneath your arms. That's just a huge. Did you know this? Here's a fun fact. Did you know that they make a deodorant for the area?
I did know that.
What is up with that?
I have heard about that.
Would you agree that that is a product solely used by gay men? I mean, I don't know,
maybe.
But would guessing?
I don't know.
Can
I would
you
say
imagine a straight man who uses that?
I think it's a case where I think they're attempting to shame men in the same way women are shamed.
Don't smell like a girl.
Don't smell like anything. Don't smell like anything human.
Smell like
it's
a
wrong.
Daisy.
It's wrong. Yeah. And so they're like, what? Where haven't we gone? Well, guys get kind of funky down there. The problem is the guys just don't feel shame.
See, that's what I'm saying. Is I can see some of your more stylish straight men or your gay men saying okay, I can see the guys in Jersey Shore using that. I'll put it that way. This is how much demand there allegedly is for this. There are two competing brands of that.
Oh.
Calvin Klein makes one.
I know there are special talcum powders just for the man's delicate area.
Well, now that is that, but now is that just a? We have to get off the subject. But is that just to stop chafing and sort of dryness and whatever?
But the thing is, how different is it from the powder that babies and ladies and everybody uses normally? Is it really special?
No.
But it's marketed specifically for that.
Somebody suggested it's called Gold Bond Tingly Crotch.
Yeah, don't ever use the Gold Bond power, by the way, in anywhere sensitive.
No. Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
The reason that it makes you not itch is that it has, like, menthol in it.
Oh, you don't want that in your business.
No.
That's going to end badly.
That's bad.
Here's the thing. Now I cannot tell the horrible, disgusting, which has to do with showering. The thing is, I had this revolting story to share with everybody, and it had to do with showering.
Well, you better do it quick, because we have an actual professional coming in.
Aaron Duran's been on hold for, like, 9 minutes, so we'll get...
Okay. Well,
do you think I should tell the story or not?
I think you should do Aaron since he's on hold, and then we'll
and then
tell,
I'll tell the story.
Tell
afterwards.
The story, yeah. Afterwards.
And then we'll get Ryan White. All right.
Or let Ryan White hear the disgusting story. He's a man of the world.
No,
he can handle it.
I'll do it in this. I'll do. We'll talk to Aaron, and I'll tell the revolting story. Then we'll get to. I don't want Ryan to hear it. It's just he's probably up to his eyeballs in disgusting things anyway. He's got like a baby and everything.
Yeah,
so it's
okay.
Just they're just nothing but spew machines. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program coming up later on this hour. We'll talk to Aaron Duran in a moment. Then later on, we got Ryan White, Corpse Watch, Taser Watch, Penis Watch, Snuff Watch. I'm sorry, Darwin Watch. And we'll have some Oscar sound from last night. Also, clue number one in the E.H. Vending Name That Snack Contest. Before we do any of that, though, ladies and gentlefolk, please now turn your attention toward our good friend, Mr. Aaron Duran, joining us now from geekinthecity.com. And there he is. All right. Hello, Aaron Duran. How are you on this fine Monday?
I'm fantastic. How are you doing?
I am fantabulous. By the way, the name of that... That name of the Calvin Klein deodorant for the business there, it's called Below the Belt, I believe. So forth. Which, by the way, they changed the name. Before it was called Below the Belt, it used to just be called... This is the name you think you'd want to stick with. Before it was called Below the Belt, they just called it Calvin Klein's Men's Other Cologne. So, hello, Aaron Duran. I'll let you kind of steer...
Why would you want to put a cologne there? Because you're not actually... You know, cleaning anything, you're just kind of masking it. Why don't you just do like the quick little, you know, how's your father scrubbing and get to the business?
How's your father? Is that like Bob's your uncle?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay. Or just carry like one of those lemon scented paper napkins, you know, like from KFC.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Or not. Hey, so we got like three different things here. So we should start with this. I teased this in Legion of News, the casting rumors about Zod. So,
yes.
Now we should back up for a second because. The deal with the new Superman film, so they cast what's-his-name, the British guy, as Superman, right? Is that the deal? Am I right about that?
Yeah, Captain Bony Cheekbones or something, who looks nothing like a good Superman, but that's just me.
What is the guy's name who's playing Superman?
I want to say Clive Owen, but that could not be more if I named it Captain Wrong.
No, it's probably not Clive Owen.
No.
Well, it's some guy. So the new Superman film is... happening. Like, it's not one of those things that where it was just it, like, because there was the Tim Burton had a script for that, and Kevin Smith had a script for that, and Nicolas Cage was going to play him at one point, and they were trying to get John Hamm to do it at one point. And so it now is happening.
Yeah, it's Henry Cavill.
All right, Henry Cavill. Is this going to be a rebooting of the entire franchise again from scratch, or do we know where the new Superman film is going to take place or when?
I'm not sure. It's going to be, I think it might become one of those quasi reboots. Like, they're not going to hopefully tell the origin, you know, once again, the origin of Superman. But I don't think it's going to acknowledge any of the previous films either. So I don't know if it's going to be like a la Batman Begins reset, or it's just going to be, hey, look, we all know who Superman is. We know where he came from. So let's just dive right into this sucker.
Yeah, the origin story for Superman, of all of the origin stories, that one just seems to be completely pointless at this juncture, especially because...
Yeah, there's no point in retelling it.
Yeah, because, as contrasted with, like, Spider-Man or something, they don't even change the origin story of Superman ever. I mean, Spider-Man, at least, you can argue with it when they did the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man, they altered... They altered the origin story a little bit in the sense that he wasn't like a big science nerd who made the web shooters and everything at home. It was like a DNA change, you know, and whatever. But with Superman, it's like it's such canon. It's such like a part of the iconography of America, the iconism of America, that they just leave it exactly the same. So I'm fine with that. You know who really gets the short end of the stick on the whole Superman thing, by the way, is what's his name? Brandon Routh? Was that his name? Who I thought made a really... I mean, he's doing a knockoff of Christopher Reeve to some degree, but I thought he was legitimately good. I thought he was I thought he was not bad at all. And I feel kind of bad for him that he's gotten so screwed by the fact that everybody just loathed that movie.
Yeah, the problem is that he made a decent Superman in Clark Kent and had potential in an awful Superman movie.
It was terrible. It was so bad. There was that whole thing at the end where he's like lifting the huge meteorite filled with kryptonite or something. Something had fallen and he had to lift it at the end, and it was something filled with kryptonite, and which he was able to do just by, you know, concentrating and trying harder, which sort of seems like not a very super way to solve your problem, but what do I know? So what is the casting news for Zod?
There's actually there's two. The two big rumors for Zod right now is Daniel Day-Lewis. But the one
what the hell was that all just the spat? Don just literally spat at that.
That's the awful rumor. But the one that I think has more validity to it, and clearly the one that all geeks and anyone fan, you know, a fan of cinema wants, is Viggo Mortensen.
Yeah! That's
pretty righteous.
That'd be fantastic.
And if you want to know what a great job Viggo Mortensen could do at this, go back and watch 1995's The Prophecy, where he played Lucifer.
Is that true?
Well, one of my favorite movies.
Is that a Carpenter joint, The Prophecy?
No, it was Gregory
Whiten.
Gregory Whiten, who did Highlander.
Yeah.
And it was like the only other good movie he ever did after the first Highlander movie. And
with Walken.
With Walken.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I have seen
that. Elias Koteas.
Yeah.
It had that great moment when Viggo Mortensen confronts Elias, who's playing the cop or whatever, and he says something like, "Little Tommy Daggett, every night praying that I'm hoping that I wasn't under your bed." And he gets in close and says, "And I was."
Oh, awesome.
Oh, he's so good.
So good.
That's fantastic. Is that just a rumor, or is that one of those like sources close to the studio saying?
It's a strong rumor. How's that? It's a sign point to yes kind of rumor.
I am wholly in favor of that.
I think that'd be a great idea.
That
so.
Is awesome. Excellent. And then there's something afoot with our fine friends at the Valve Corporation, is there not?
Yeah, Valve, they own the company Steam, which is that direct download service for Mac and PC. Mm-hmm. Valve are the people behind like Half-Life and Team Fortress, Left 4 Dead. I was getting there. Slow down,
sorry.
Tiger.
Sorry.
Anyway, they are looking to move beyond PC and Mac streaming, and as technology improves, they are hoping to have direct television downloads of their games, to where basically you would just plug an adaptable controller into your TV, and you would download the Valve library into your television.
Wow. So they'd be circumventing like the console market altogether, expanding on the console market, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, that's way down the line. I mean, at first, they're going to kind of placate, you know, Sony and Microsoft and what have you, but... Their eyes are definitely – they seem to have a strong vision to the future and understand that the hard format of receiving entertainment is going to go away. You know, the DVD, or whatever. And they pretty much see that, like, look, we're just going to beam the sucker right to your TV, which will be interesting. There'll be a lot of people that are going to complain because they're going to feel like, well, I'm not going to physically own the product then. Valve can, you know, return my download or turn me off at any time. But it's like – it's not like it's a piece of music that you will maybe hand down or, you know, keep on the shelf forever. I mean, who keeps a game for more than a couple years at the most anyway?
Yeah, I mean, it's not like anybody's going to, you know, really – I mean, unless you're talking about GoldenEye, nobody's going and playing something from, you know, for more than a couple years ago.
Yeah, and the other good thing about that is that it cuts out so much of the middlemen and their production, because right now video games are kind of in this artistic stagnant point that's actually being hurt by a lot of the secondary market. When you buy a game like at a GameStop and then they buy it back from you and sell it used, that's actually hurting the gaming industry in the long term, because companies don't want to take a chance on an experimental type of game. They only want to put out the guaranteed, you know, 2 million plus sellers. So like your Call of Duties. That's why you're just seeing the same thing getting made over and over and over again, because it's not financially feasible for a game company to take a chance on a smaller game. But if you can charge half the cost and do a direct download, you might see game companies be more willing to try stuff out again.
Well, especially for niche games, like, I mean, this is, and this really is, I mean, I know a lot of people who play Portal, but Portal's a niche game.
Because
you know, you're just never going to get the average boob to sit there and just play some game based on physics where you can't actually, you know, shoot anything. And that's a game that, you know, Valve can do because they've got significant financial reserves, but a smaller company would probably find that financially disadvantageous, so they could do this. That's a great idea. I got to tell you, and I have said this forever and ever, I am a proud user and subscriber of the Napster service, which is sort of like, you know, which is like Rhapsody, basically, but it's a music subscription service. And it's like, I think they dropped the price again. It's like $5 a month. And it is essentially unlimited. I mean, and when I say essentially unlimited, it's limited only by the library, by their selection, which is huge. I mean, I can't remember the last time I went to look for something new or old that they didn't have. And I can take it with me anywhere. I can put it on my computer. I can have it on my iPhone. It can stream. I can download it. I can burn it. I can do whatever. You know, and it's like $5 a month. And it doesn't physically, you know, like I don't own the CD of it really, you know, for the most part. But it's just sort of there in a virtual sense or whatever, which is fine. I mean, because it's reasonably priced. So I have no need to ever cancel the service.
Right. Yeah.
Awesome. We are living in the future. I was noting this last hour with that whole picture of the space shuttle taken from the space station. It was just freaking me out.
Here's where the future becomes far more terrifying. The final story I have. So everybody knows the fun-loving folks at DARPA. They're the defense initiative that just give billions of dollars to people to create death rays and transporters and mind control devices or what have you. They just granted one of their biggest grants of all time to the company that – remember the robotic dog that haunts your dreams because it can't be knocked down?
Yes. That thing is terrifying.
Yes. That company with the using the grant money from DARPA is working on perfecting the technology and is creating something called the Cheetah, which uses similar technology, does not run on diesel, will run on basically power batteries that can run for hours and hours, even days at a time. And on foot can exceed the speed of the very cat that it is named after and will be trained to take people down.
Don, have you seen this the photograph or the video of the thing he's talking about, this robot that can't be knocked over?
Yeah.
And it's on ice.
Yeah.
And they're kicking it down a hill, and it's just like, whoop, 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 whoop. And it just can't – yeah, it wobbles, but it doesn't fall down.
Yeah.
So now – but that thing is kind of slow. So this would be faster than a cheetah, and it would have, like, first strike capability.
Well, yeah.
Robot cats.
Yes.
Yeah.
They're saying that its main goal will be able to rush into burning buildings and grab victims and safely pull them out, much like how a mother cat will kind of grab her young by the scruff of their necks and pull them down. But the horrifying thing is basically they're going to give this the ability and the strength to take down a human, and then they're going to give it image recognizing software so that it knows to only target the bipedal fleshy creatures on the battlefield.
So it'll be a robocat.
Yeah. Pretty much.
Well, see, and here's the thing. We've noted many, many times that the only reason your cat hasn't killed you yet is because it's not able to. I mean, it's tried. Like, when you wake up, do you ever think you wake up and the cat's, like, batting your face or something? Or the cat's trying to smother you. Just because it can't do it doesn't mean it's not trying to. So now this will actually do – this will accomplish in a mechanical form what cats in an organic form have been unable to achieve, which is the death of humans.
Yes.
Okay. Well, great.
And we'll be making it. Our tax dollars are going to pay for it. So happy day.
Well, of course. Well, yeah, I'd much rather have that than a school system that works.
Yeah.
All right. We should mention that coming up this Saturday at the Beaverton location of Things from Another World, Mr. Aaron Duran, happy birthday, by the way.
Thank you.
Aaron Duran and James Sinclair are going to be autographing they're going to be signing and selling copies of La Brujera issue number one. And so you're going to be able to find out more about that at geekinthecity.com. But it's happening this Saturday at Things from Another World in Beaverton. What time is that happening?
It's from noon to 3 this coming Saturday.
All right. So that is noon to 3 this Saturday. Beaverton, Things from Another World. Find out more at geekinthecity.com. Awesome. Excellent. All right, ladies and gentlemen, Aaron Duran, thank you, my friend.
Thank you very much. Thanks, guys.
This is Aaron Duran with The Week in Geek. Awesome. All right, then. Just a few minutes, we'll be joined by Mr. Ryan White, music editor from The Oregonian, and so forth. All right.
So forth?
So forth. Nah, I was just, I don't know what I was doing there. Later on, we got your corpse watch, taser watch, penis watch, a Darwin watch, which I don't know what that is. That seems to have just come across the transom in the last few.
And here's the problem. I may have spoken too soon because...
not dead?
Cheryl forwarded us the Darwin watch story via email, and it had been sent to us by alert listener Melissa. And it's on some kind of file sharing website where the files can get uploaded. And
yes.
It doesn't go there. I click on the link and it just doesn't go there.
Okay. So it exists. We just can't read it.
Right.
All right. Awesome. And so forth. Well, we should probably just take a break here. I don't even have time. I don't have time to get to the revolting story. It's just.
Okay.
It has to do with vomit, and it's a whole thing.
Your vomit?
You know, no, someone else's.
Okay.
I swear to God, I wasn't trying to do the whole thing. I walked into that, but it really was someone else's vomit. Okay. Nor will I have – I haven't had a chance to talk about that. I won't get a chance to talk about the whole gas mask thing from this weekend. And your serial killer
observation. I know.
We'll talk about the serial killer thing when we come back.
Okay.
I bet Ryan White has thoughts on that. You're listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. All of that plus clue number one in the E.H. Vending Name That Snack contest for this week. We will tell you about the winner from last week and what the snack was. And then we'll give the first clue, Monday's clue, and that is coming up later on. And plus the top five from Don Taylor, the top five songs Don Taylor uses to put herself into show mode. So stay there. We return after this. Go nowhere.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Network.
Don't ever do that again. Oh, God. All right. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. By the way, for those who are playing the home game, if you had Don Taylor and Ryan White are doing the hip-hop head bounce simultaneously, you can just You may have a bingo. Okay. Thank you for joining us. 503-505-6964. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com or Dawn, D-A-W-N, at rickemerson.com. In just one moment, we'll be joined by Mr. Ryan White. Yes?
I was going to ask you this off the air, but I forgot. Would you hand me the pages on the printer?
Well, that's not very interesting at all. I thought it was going to be something sorted.
Oh, no.
Later on, we'll have Dawn Taylor's top five songs that Dawn Taylor uses to put herself in show mode. Also, Corpse Watch, Taser Watch, Penis Watch, and clue number one in the EH Trending Name That Snack contest. Plus, we've got I've got some of the some more Oscar stuff from last night. We had Colin Firth's thing. We had what's his name?
Right.
Tim Hooper? Tom Hooper?
Tom Hooper.
Tad Hooper, the guy who directed King's Speech.
Not Toby Hooper.
No, not Toby Hooper. How great would that be?
I know.
Let's
Toby
see.
Toby Hooper wins an Oscar.
And I've got some other crap as well, so yeah. We'll get to that. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Radio Program from the Oregonian, Mr. Ryan White. Hello, sir.
Hello. I'm just going to sit here and bob my head.
It was so great. One of these days, I keep saying that I'm going to put a webcam in, but the thing is then we would just be all self-conscious and these great moments wouldn't happen. I would ask how you are, except just now as you came into the studio, I said something like that, and you mentioned that your house got robbed on Wednesday.
Yeah, half the reason that I'm like, I've just reached that point of slap happiness over the last, 5 days of dealing with fallout and mess and starting to deal with insurance companies. And
so was it, when you say robbed, it was like somebody forced their way in or somebody busted
a
window?
Yeah, somebody kicked the back door in half.
Oh, my God.
Kicked the bottom half completely clean of the top half.
Was there, standing in the back of your house or look at the back door, was there something obvious inside that they saw and they went, I want that right there?
No, it goes to the garage, but the place had been cased. It was actually the place had been cased. They knew what was in there. As near as we can tell, it happened within an hour and a half. We'd left home at 9:15, and the house cleaner, and I always feel like, as I've been telling the story, I have to justify the house cleaner. It's like the most embarrassing
thing.
My
help came by.
Which my wife's mom is a gift because we've just been run ragged with baby stuff and work for a Christmas gift. She got us like 9 house cleanings.
Awesome.
And so this really nice woman, she showed up at probably about 10:45 and started in on the cleaning and then kind of realized that something was amiss. And, we've got an attached garage, and that door was wide open, which it never is.
Right.
And it's usually locked. And she poked her head out there, and she saw the bottom half of the door kicked in. And so she called my wife, who said, well, get out of the house. And
right.
My wife called the cops, and then they called me. And then we all went over there and waited an hour for the cops to show up and then went in and assessed the damage.
And would you get a lot of stuff taken, or was it just sort of like you said they cased it, so they probably had figured out, what they were after, or?
To a degree. They got all 3 computers in the house. They got the flip cam, they got the digital camera, they got the 48-inch HD TV, they got all the jewelry. They managed. I thought I was being so smart. About 2 months ago, I realized, the vast quantity of stuff that we had, especially on the iMac that was downstairs, and largely thinking about, at that point, 8 months, 7, 8 months, now 9 months worth of photos and video of our daughter. And so I went out and I got a 1 terabyte drive,
right.
Backed everything up, was going to just update it monthly, put it in the fire safe box that we've got that had birth certificates and passports and social security cards and life insurance information. It turns out all I did by being smart was take our most important stuff and put a handle on it.
Put it all in one place.
Just put a handle on it. And so that was gone. So we lost all of that. The jewelry, nothing was, that's the thing that drives me, that bothers me the most is losing that. My wife lost a brooch that wasn't worth all that much except that it had been her grandmother's and it had a photo of her grandmother and her grandfather in it. It's, everything else is just stuff. We'll get a new TV. We'll get new computers. But it would be nice to have that. I just want that one drive back, and I want to take the information and put it on a new computer, and then I want to take the drive, and I want to beat somebody to within an inch of their bloody lives with it.
It's just, and that's the, like...
It seems simple.
I don't want to say it's the worst thing, but one of the worst things about being robbed, and it's just, and here's, it's like, think of the brains it takes to rob somebody, like to steal, you know, to kick in a door or break a window. I mean, think of how dumb you can be and still do that. Yeah. That is one of the worst things about being robbed or having your car broken into, is that like some puny brain. I mean, just some guy brain like the brain like a kidney bean has just busted into your place and taken your stuff. And then there's the whole like, you know, just some creep like rooting around in your crap or whatever. It's just. Yeah, that is one of the truest lines ever committed to celluloid. It was that line that Travolta says in Pulp Fiction, where he says it would have been worth the guy doing it just to have caught him doing it.
Yeah,
and I mean, I don't think I've ever lived anywhere where my home was actually broken into. I mean, I have my car's broken into a lot, but I don't think my home has ever been broken into. But my wife did that years ago when she lived in a condo. It got broken into. She said it was like as angry as she's ever been. I mean, just incandescent, like vibrating with anger, like for days and days and days after.
Yeah, I had an apartment broken into a few years ago. I was angry then. This was more a situation where I didn't have time to be angry. I just had to deal with everything else. So.
And so do they have? I mean, it's one of those things where you just sort of figure that the cops say what the cops say, but I always sort of suspect that for the cops, it's just sheer happenstance or luck if they come across this stuff. But I don't know.
Yeah, they said there's actually a burglary division now that, you know, so things are getting a little more work than they normally would. I was thoroughly expecting one of those like Lebowski moments, like, oh yeah, they got Captain's got us working in shifts. And even, you know, they left the – I was joking. They left the Creedence, but they smashed my Bob Seger record. So
this is where I'm supposed to go. Well, if I can help in any way, but I mean, it's like I just – yeah.
And, you know, everybody says that, but the only thing that you could do is help with paperwork, and that sucks.
And so is that a thing where you got to file, I mean, I guess like with your insurance company or with
I mean, I went through last night. First I put the basement back together, and then I tore it apart looking for all the documentation of everything, basically over $250.
Right.
And the only thing that I can't find, and I can see it, I can see the receipt, and I can see all of the like serial number information and everything in my head, but I cannot find the documentation for my electric guitar that they got.
Mm.
And so I'm living in a small amount of fear that I'm about to eat a $500 electric guitar out of this thing.
Right. Here's the other thing that you have to look forward to over the next few weeks. As you tell, and people have only the best intentions. I understand that. I'm not trying to. When people say, "Can I help?" or you know, "Hey, you know, maybe here's something you could try." People are really honestly trying to help most of the time. But the thing that you have probably already gotten and that you will now get for the next 10 or 12 days is people telling you what you should do to make this better the next time it happens.
Yeah.
You know, where they'll have some, you know, well, what you want to do from now on, Ryan, here, the problem you had is that the mistake you made was putting everything in a hard drive and then not putting it inside, and then they'll have some, like, solution, which again, helps you in the future, does nothing to help has happened now.
All of the things that could have prevented these things make perfect sense now.
Yeah, that's the...
The funny thing was is, you know, and like a friend of mine, you know, kind of brought a laptop over that afternoon for us, because even like twice when the police were still there, you know, one of the officers looks at me and she goes, "And you can update all of this stuff online." And I kind of gave her a sideways look. She goes, "But you don't have any computers."
Oh, that sucks. Oh, well, and I mean, it's just, and not to continue poking at the whatever, but so I mean, you're a writer. Did you? I mean, was there writing on there that you were? I knew a guy, he didn't get it stolen, but I know a guy, this is before everything was backed up, as you said, on external drives, but he had like a novel or something he was writing, and then the thing bit the dust and he lost it.
There's a lot of notes, there's a lot of other things. Fortunately, when we got the new Mac last year, we went cheap and just decided to do everything in Google Documents, so everything that I'd done on there is in the cloud, yes. Right. But, you know, I started when I realized that the amount of music that was gone off of those discs. I looked at my wife and go, "We don't have any music," because they got all the iPods. Right. They got the dock, and there's just 19,000-20,000 songs in the iTunes library. I was like, "We don't have any music." She goes, "Aside from the 700 to 1,000 physical CDs that we have downstairs." I was like, "Oh yeah,
well, I guess
we still
that.
Got those."
Well, and that's one of those things where the other frustrating thing is like I had a bunch of, you know, this is years and years and years ago, but I had a bunch of CDs or stuff stolen. I don't know, I guess back in the mid-90s. But even in the mid-90s, CDs weren't worth that much. It's like, what were you really going to get by hawking, you know, my Dangerous Toys discography? Like, nothing. And so you just – that is the other thing where you're going like – you're not, especially with that computer stuff, it's like they're going to get so little money for that relative to the effort and risk that they put in stealing it. I mean, there's just no point. I mean, memory is just so cheap. It's not like you're going to be able to sell like a 1 terabyte drive and fund like your getaway to Acapulco or something.
I mean, it was only $100 new.
Yeah, so. I mean, so it's just that again is where you realize you're just dealing with some moron.
There was a moment where I was convinced that they had stolen just the DVDs from the Darkness on the Edge of Town box set, which was like, you know, what kind of a man steals another man's Springsteen?
That's wrong.
And then I was cleaning yesterday and I found it underneath the couch as they had just swiped the entire thing clean as they were trying to get the TV out of there. So.
Well, that's just now, actually, as we were getting ready to do, I guess it was Legion of News. I actually said, I'll be right back. And I grabbed my keys and I ran downstairs right before we went on the air. And it's because I realized, and I don't ever do this, but I realized that I had left my iPhone, and I don't know how to compare the two things, but I left my iPhone sitting on the passenger seat of my car downstairs. And again, you know, in the grand scheme of things, I mean, it's, you know, especially with, you know, with stuff like that that goes out, it goes obsolete so fast. Those aren't, you know, you can get a used one of those for relatively cheap, and which also means you can't sell it for that much. But it's exactly the kind of thing that you know a guy would smash your window to steal, you know. And if he thought it through, he wouldn't do it. But then again, if he thought it through, he probably wouldn't be in that line of work anyway. Yeah. So, ugh. Have you ever had been burgled? Had your place broken into?
Not like you, not someone I live. I've had cars broken into. That was one of those things where I remember having a car in particular where they obviously tried to steal the car and weren't successful at it because they happened to try to steal my car when the battery was dead. It was parked on the street and my battery had died. And so I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to have to get my car jumped tomorrow. I come in and like the window's broken and they tried to cored out my ignition and they couldn't start the car. So instead they just like stole my stereo and all the CDs out of my glove compartment, which I was like, really?
Well, that's just like in a fit of pique.
Yeah.
You know, where they're just, we can't start it. Well, the hell. And they'll just,
we'll
ruin
just take
your
this.
Day.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had somebody try and steal my car once. And then when the anti-theft kicked in and shut it down, they just stole the airbags.
The airbag. That's.
And those are actually worth something.
Yeah. And that's the thing that I didn't know until a cop actually told me that. He was that there's this whole weird like underground like ring of airbag thieves or whatever. And I guess they get taken and resold to less than scrupulous shops who then install them or something. This is why I try, and I did it once in my life and I have felt bad about it ever since, and I've always felt like I paid for it with karma down the line. This is why I try to never buy anything that I have a reasonable suspicion, you know, might be stolen, because when I was, I don't know, when I was like maybe 17 or 18, and I don't know that it was, when I was 17 or 18, I bought a stereo or radio for my car, and the guy, like I said, I have no way of knowing that it was stolen, but in retrospect, it probably was, and I think I probably suspected at the time that I was paying too little for too much stereo. And every time, and for the next, I think, like 3 or 4 car break-ins that happened to me, I sort of figured that I was like paying. That was my penance. I was like, that was my Hail Marys that I was doing, and I didn't, and it sucked, but I didn't complain about it that much. The one that irritated me the most, and it was when I. And it was to some degree my own fault. I was living in Spokane, where all the bad things happened. And I had some guy broke into my car at night, and I had in the back, and you couldn't see it from the outside. It's one of the things you look back and you don't know why you did this. In the back of my car, it was completely covered by blankets. You never would have known it was there because the blankets were really flush against the back seat, and they were the same color. I had an electric guitar. You couldn't see that again from the outside. What you could see from the outside was a bunch of CDs that I'd left sitting there. So I think what happened is they busted the car looking for the, you know, I'll get those CDs. And then they lifted them up and, hey, here's a blanket. They pulled the blanket off. Here's my electric guitar. The very worst thing about it, though, is, and I lived at the top of a hill, they didn't even steal the freaking thing. They just took my electric guitar and they threw it down the hill.
Oh, God.
Sort of like a whoosh. It's like they were doing the hammer throw in track and field, and they just chucked it on a hill where, of course, it just snapped into pieces. And I just sat there, I'm not a large or physically imposing man in any way, but so in retrospect, it is good that this did not happen. But the next couple of nights, I actually did with a friend of mine. I actually sat up in the window of my apartment, which overlooked the parking lot, just waiting to see if they would come back. I had, you know, like. If I was there with, you know, they were like a 9-iron or something that my friend had brought over. I don't know what I would have done, because clearly I would have been such a colossal pussy that I wouldn't have followed through on it. But it was that thing where you are just fueled by the absolute, you know, by the absolute realization that you have been wronged in the moment. most, not just in a bad way, but in an unmanly way. That it's just like the idea that the guy just took the guitar and then just chucked it down a hill just seemed like a it's like the Springsteen theft. Just seemed like a violation of all that men agree upon with, you know, with each other. It just it was just a violation in the deepest sense. God damn.
Wednesday afternoon I got a call from our executive editor when he heard what had happened, and which was very nice of him. And I said, he said, don't worry about work, just get back whenever you can get back. And I said, okay. I said, probably Monday. And I said, if you need me before then, I'm going to be sitting in the darkest corner of the house with a hatchet waiting.
Yeah, is it one of those things where you're going to look, you watch Craigslist or something?
Yeah, I've been watching Craigslist. I've been meaning to make a run about some North Portland pawn shops, but I don't have it. Again, the only thing that I give a damn about, I know I'm not going to get back.
Is that drive?
Yeah, it's that drive.
And the irony there, of course, is that the reason you're not going to get it back, even though it's important, is because it's as important as it is to you, that is how unimportant it is to them. Because by definition, that is the thing where the value is totally in, you know, that is totally a contextual value. Well, that sucks. If you have a reasonable suspicion you know who it is and you need a beating applied, I probably can't do that, but I know people who can do that. I know people who are
I was hoping this was going to be a segue to a new sponsor or something.
Seriously, there ought to be a sponsor of just, you know, like a guy who will just handle somebody for you. Like a one size fits all. Like you pay one price and that covers everything. It covers your bail bond. It covers your dry cleaning for if there's any sort of spattering. You know, one low price and a guy gets what he deserves.
Oh, spattering.
Spattering
would be nice.
I'd
like some spattering.
I will say this, I actually, a while back, somebody very generously, I was going on about my MacBook when I got it, which is the first, this is the first really pricey piece of computer equipment I've ever owned. I've just run on just low-end Windows stuff. And so I finally, I saved up and I put money aside and whatever, and I got my MacBook and I was, just over the moon about how great it was. And actually somebody gifted me this application called MacTrack. And what MacTrack is it's just a little piece of, it's a little piece of software that runs in the background that you can't see. I think to even view the application, you have to click something else and do this you have to do this whole weird circuitous process to even see it, and then you have to use a code to disable it. But if the Mac gets stolen, I can actually turn it on remotely. I can log into their website. I can turn it on remotely, and then it does a few things. It sends a message every 30 seconds to the company's server telling them the not just the IP address if it's logged in, but actually the longitude and latitude that the Mac is at that moment. It's like, hey, I've been stolen. I'm at longitude 54, latitude 75. And then here's the greatest thing about it. Without giving away that it is doing so, the built-in webcam takes a photograph every 30 seconds and uploads it too. So you can actually be like, it's just been stolen. And that's the guy who stole it right there. And that's the thing where it is
awesome.
I almost hope that at some point this thing gets stolen just for the satisfaction of the cops, you know, just finding the guy, you know, by just rolling up whatever McDonald's he's sitting at and just going, you know, like, did you steal this? No. And then saying, is this you? And then just showing a series of photographs as he's running out of my house with it or something. So,
well, if you want somebody to steal it, you better get a new invisible shield then, because it's pretty dingy looking.
Well, no, see, that. But I leave this on now as a camouflage. This invisible shield on the outside. The reason I don't replace that is because now it looks like it's worth less than it is.
Right.
Well, one of the things that they, we've spent the last 4 days you start looking around for something. It's like, where did that go? Too? And one thing was there was just a basket of loose change sitting in our room, and they took that. And when I realized that, I just wanted to go, and it was way too late anyways because I realized it 3 days later. I wanted to go just sit behind the Coinstar machine at the closest Fred Meyer and wait for that basket to show up.
God damn. Let's see. Somebody says, did the cops treat Ryan like a crook when he was robbed? When I was robbed in 2009, oh, this is our friend Seamus, and I remember when this happened. Actually, this is the creepiest story. If I've got this right, he actually was asleep. He was taking a nap. He woke up, and there was a guy. I forget the details of this are sort of eluding me. Because I remember if he lived in an apartment building or not. I don't think so. But there was a guy outside who was the meter reader or something. And then he's like, what the hell is that noise? Oh, it's the meter reader. And he goes back to sleep. And then what he discovered later is it was not a meter reader. It was a guy in a meter reader uniform who then robbed the house while he was sleeping. He was actually asleep, and the guy in the uniform robbed and stole $30,000 worth of stuff. And I remember getting the email from him when this happened, where they stole all of his – and he works for Sun, and so he, you know, he lived in the middle of nowhere at the time. It was all, you know, just surrounded by computer equipment, all of his computer equipment, all of his gaming stuff, all of his everything gone. He says, they treated me like I'd done it myself. Having your home invaded is the worst feeling ever. The extent the cops will help you with is taking all the serial numbers you give them and putting them in a statewide database that pawn shops will check. So finally, he says, robbery advice. I got this advice directly from C.W. Jensen, who's a former PDX police spokesperson who has done a lot of reality shows. He says he told me, get a big dog and a shotgun. That's really the only robbery insurance that that will work. So there you go.
I remember seeing Carl Hyson do a reading at Powell's a few years ago, and somebody asked him where he comes up with any number of the deranged ways that people die in his novels, all set in Florida. And he was talking about a friend of his who lived in the Florida Keys who, he said, for reasons none of us were quite clear about, was not allowed to own a firearm. And he kept having break-ins at his place. And so he'd had this really big iguana that died, and he was keeping the iguana in a freezer. And he would stay at home on Friday nights with the lights out near the freezer waiting for thieves to come back, and he was just going to beat them with the frozen iguana.
That's fantastic.
And then a hurricane came through and knocked out power for like a week, and they had to finally get rid of the the iguana. But it's like a shotgun.
That's an odd story.
Only a frozen iguana.
Okay. Here's Don Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
Well, after that, I'm going to read the most cheerful story that I have in the stack.
Okay. So.
A hen in southeast Iowa has provided its owner with a prize he calls Eggnormous.
Uh-huh.
It's a 4.1-ounce egg that's about twice the size of large eggs sold by the dozen in supermarkets. It was laid February 18th by an Australorp hen. 37-year-old Nathan Batten carried the egg around in his coat pocket for a couple of days to show his friends. He's since put it in the refrigerator.
He has a small life.
The egg measures 3.5 inches long, 6.5 inches around.
Please tell me that you pulled this story just because Ryan came in here and was telling you know, the tale of his the burgling, and you went online and found this, that you had not already pulled this and prepared it and set it aside as a thing you had to read.
Sure.
Okay. Great.
Sean Skian raises chickens at Blue Gate Farm in Cheriton, Iowa. He says egg size depends on chicken breed, not chicken feed. He says Australorp eggs usually weigh about 3 ounces. According to the Des Moines Register, Batten intends to contact Guinness World Records to see whether he's got a worthy entry.
You're listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Here is Don Taylor.
Let's do our taser watch.
All right, that sounds better. All right. Here's your taser watch.
Eggnormous.
Thank you. Are you trying to lure me into additional chicken-based puns? Is that the thing?
No.
Okay, because I can be easily lured. The thing is, as much as I hate puns, I can be drawn into a sort of pun-off like very, very easily. No. So for reasons that I can't really explain.
I do not have a facility for puns. So if I use puns, it's generally because some idiot somewhere wrote it in
somebody
the story
KGW
that I'm reading.
KGW wrote it first.
Yeah, I don't. My brain just doesn't really work that way. So generally, if I use a pun, it's completely inadvertent. I'm not good. Or it's something like, you know, one of those, like it's a fish thing. It's like for the halibut. It's something that's so common that, of course, I know it. But I'm not very.
Can I just tell you this? First of all, the puns, and the thing is, I know that there was a time when puns were considered the highest form of humor. I was reading
people pooped outside then, though.
It's true. I was reading some, like, I don't know, history of, you know, comedy or whatever, and they were talking about – they were going back through, like, the age of Dorothy Parker and Benchley and whatever, and they were talking about English society, and at one point, English society, it was considered, like, the height of wit if you were able to pun sort of ad hoc, you know, just on command. And I have always considered puns so corny and cheesy, but the thing is, what I've discovered is – that while that is true, they're also a thing that I just find it like I am powerless to resist them. Like and the thing is, and I married somebody who's exactly the same way, where Lara like realizes how stupid they are. But it's like we'll get into some sort of weird superpower face off at the house, where it's like we'll go back and forth until somebody chokes and can't come up with another.
Well,
one.
It is a mental exercise. I mean, I suppose. there has to be some degree of cleverness, I think, to pull it off well.
Now I have to tell you, so you know, there was that whole thing for Valentine's Day where you could buy somebody a hissing roach at the Bronx Zoo, and so I did that, and so I adopted this roach or whatever from the Bronx Zoo, and there's a whole card you put together. Did you hear about this?
I did not.
Yeah, so at the Bronx Zoo they have these
they have 58,000 hissing Madagascar roaches. So as a fundraiser, for $10 you could name one after someone and then send them a Valentine's card.
Do they have them on purpose or did they just show up?
They were just sort of there. and then you would get
the Bronx.
You get this email that's like a little like a postcard with like a picture of a roach sort of looking at the camera or whatever, and then it says so and so has adopted a roach in your name. It's kind of like the thing what they do with the fly covered kids, but with roaches. And it's like you can like write a little message, you know, like to your beloved, like telling them how you purchased an insect for them or something. And so I was really, really proud of myself that I of course filled it with insect puns because I'm an idiot. But I started with one. I came up with this whole cloth. It was pure Rick right out of my brain. The subject line was. And then everything's funnier if you end it with an ellipsis, because then it's because then it's only a partial thought. So I opened it with, "I wrote you a card."
That's amusing.
Bam!
I
wrote you a card.
Yeah.
Okay.
Seriously, at this point, the only thing that I'm not going to find funny is Charlie Sheen jokes.
Well, you're in the wrong place, my friend.
So a Florida man is facing...
I'm sorry, where?
Florida.
Damn it.
That's not it.
They do have those there.
Yeah. Florida man is facing multiple felony charges after police say he attacked and bit his aunt on... I never know
his
how to pronounce
aunt?
It. I always say aunt.
And then he came out of nowhere and bit me.
See, I come from California.
Oh, come on.
So
I don't even
going
to chuckle at that.
Yeah. It was aunt. Yes, it was the big trees. Yes,
fine.
Anyway,
I'm not going to try to be funny anymore.
Some people say aunt, and I don't do that. And some people have there's some kind of middle ground between aunt and aunt.
No one says aunt. If you're in New England, you say aunt. Yeah. I don't think anybody else. I don't think it's a Southern thing. I think it's just a New England thing.
I don't know how to do it. Anyway, he bit his aunt, causing injuries that required medical attention.
You keep saying aunt, though, is
aunt.
The thing.
Aunt.
If I was stoned, this would be the funniest thing ever, and it's still pretty funny now.
According to a news release, when a Marianna police officer arrived in response to a 911 call of someone needing help, he saw Adrian Lamar Graham, 25, on top of his aunt, Mary Catherine Hall, holding her down and biting her head and neck. The officer gave several orders for Graham to stop biting his aunt, and when he did not, the officer deployed his taser. Graham was then taken into custody. Hall was taken to Jackson Hospital, treated for lacerations to her back and neck. She also had several stitches to repair an injury to her right ear.
I'm sorry, maybe I missed this whole thing, but why the biting?
It doesn't say. Just there was a 911 call. They got there. The guy was on top of the lady, holding her down and biting her on the head and neck. And apparently biting off part of her ear.
Biting off part of the ear.
Oh, wait a minute. He was charged with 3 counts of battery on a law enforcement officer, because I guess he fought bad. 2 counts of aggravated battery with deformation. Resisting arrest with violence. Possession of cocaine.
Okay.
And aggravated child abuse. Because apparently the woman's son, young son, sustained injuries while trying to defend his mother.
Stop with the biting.
From the biting.
And then said, no, I like it. I'm going to continue.
Yeah. But there was possession cocaine involved.
Yeah, well,
so
that explains
might
a
have
lot
been,
of... Almost any story can be explained by that.
And it's Florida.
You know what's weird is occasionally you see these like papers will publish the crime blotters or whatever, especially in small towns. Small town crime blotters on the newspaper, that's the greatest entertainment you're going to get in a tiny town is reading the crime blotter. Or you'll read sometimes you can get ER reports. And you'll get an astonishing number of bitings that happen, and it'll say things like, I think in the second Freakonomics book, the guys they're talking about about survival rates at various ERs, depending on when you go in and what kind of doctor you get and whatever. But they're talking about the typical ER report log from like a Saturday night or something. And they said that every week they will get cases of people biting other people. And occasionally the notations like bit someone in the course of performing his job duty. And then there's like no further notation and there's no explanation of it whatsoever. So it's the biting is, I think, maybe a lot more common than we think. All right. That was where? That was in Florida?
That was in Florida.
And then there was the tasing that was only sort of like an ancillary part of it, because the biting, it seems, is the meat of that story.
Yeah, but we don't really have a biting watch.
No. All right, no. There you go. That's your taser watch. For... By the way, somebody said somebody wants you to know he feels your pain regarding the Gold Bond medicated powder. He says Gold Bond on your sack feels like sitting on a block of ice. And then he notes, I think, rather unnecessarily, it's awful in all caps. So not
ice on your sack in a good way.
No. It just seems like that's unpleasant. No.
By the way, we got an email. I believe you got the email as well. Listener John says, "Hey, I was listening to old episodes because I'm cool like that, and I just thought you'd like to know that the first thing you two ever talked about on the air was cheesecake."
Really?
November 11th, 2008.
Okay. In what context did we talk about?
I don't know. He didn't say. Then I don't remember it.
Well, I've got it at home. Maybe
It seems odd that the first thing we would talk about would be cheesecake when I would come on to talk about like movies.
Well,
or
you
something.
Know, November 11th, 2008, though, but that wasn't the first time you were on. That was the first time you were – that wasn't the first time you were filling in for Tim, though, because he didn't get sacked until December. Really? You weren't on the show until November 2008? Because that would have made it only a month before you became one of the sort of rotating fill-in folks.
Well, you knew immediately that I was awesome.
Yeah, well, no, that's I'm just saying it seems like I've always known you.
I'd been going in long more than a
seems
month
seems like a
before.
Tedious eternity since we first met.
Yeah.
So, well, you know, here's – so we were actually talking about this yesterday. So in like a couple weeks, I'm going to be gone for a few days in New York. And we were just like, well, what should we – you know, do we just want to do like, you know, just pawn off a bunch of old – you know, schlep a bunch of dreck on people as you know. No, they're – you know, they're encores of some of the most glorious – you know, and just – getting crap out of the archives, just do stuff from a box at home, or should we record brand new shows or have guest hosts or whatever? But you know what I do have is I have like thousands and thousands of hours of the show, which is stupid because I never listened to it ever. I mean, you couldn't inflict.
Well, why would you?
I wouldn't and I don't. You can't make me. There is
but
no
it's your
horror.
Career, though. Of course you're saving that stuff.
But for what reason? Like the Museum of TV and Radio is going to call me and put me next to Cronkite or something?
I might. You've got a few more years in you. You know, something could happen.
I could. What do you mean I got a few more years in me? What does that even mean? Whatever. Anyway.
Don knows things.
Anyway.
But only a few more.
I was just going to say that what I do have is I do have that show because I have that whole run of the show at home in digital format. So I have the first show where you were, you know, whatever that
program was. I had to be going in more than that, though, because if it was December 2008 that Tim left, that would have meant I'd only been on the show like four times. And that can't be right. I'd been coming in once a week for a while before that.
Yeah, because many people got fired on December 8th, which we then christened like the worst day in history, because that was like John Lennon's death day. And that was the day that Dimebag Daryl got shot. It was like the worst day ever. And then that was the day that they fired Tim and Cheryl and a whole bunch of other people. So, I'll go back. There's an archive somewhere online. There's a guy, in fact, it is listener Dan, I believe, in New Zealand, who has been keeping an archive of like what we talk about every single day and has been doing so for, I don't know, like the better part of a decade. So I just saw that look right now. That was a little – that wasn't so much a roll of the eyes as it was like an arched eyebrow sort of a – and what's going on there sort of a look.
Hey, God bless him.
No, I'm just – well, he knows I'm not going to do it. So I can't even remember like what the show is about by the time I get home in the afternoon. Yeah. By the time we walk into the kitchen at the end of the day, I have no idea what we've discussed or how or when. What were we talking about just now, as a matter of fact?
Cheesecake. Oh, before that, I don't know. Tingly crotch. And you were going to ask me, we were going to talk about that whole serial killer thing.
God damn, we're stupid. Not you, Ryan. You're exempted
from
that. You really are. You're the lone smart person in the room most of the time.
No.
Just no.
Okay. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Later on, we got your top five coming up. Also, Corpse Watch, Penis Watch, and...
And did you during the break, between shows, glean any Charlie Sheen sound?
Or... You mean like additional Charlie Sheen sound? No, I did not.
No.
You mean like even from the stuff you were talking about where he was calling himself a wizard or whatever?
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
I mean, okay. It's probably out there, but no, I was busy trying to I was busy editing down some more of the Oscar stuff, and
well, just as an aside though, because we won't revisit Charlie Sheen too much, but I just wanted to say these out loud that he appeared on some morning shows this morning, and among the things he said was that he said CBS owes him an apology, quote, publicly while licking my feet. He said he's bored now with cocaine, but said he exposed people to magic when they partied with him and loved doing drugs. He said, what's not to love, especially when you see how I party? It was epic. The run I was on made Sinatra, Flynn, Jagger, Richards just look like droopy-eyed armless children.
Droopy-eyed armless children.
And this is why everybody on Twitter making the Charlie Sheen jokes, they aren't funny, because you can't beat that.
Well, that's the thing, is it's like trying to parody Gilligan's Island.
Yeah.
It can't be done.
And, of course, my other favorite quote, I am on a drug. It's called Charlie Sheen.
Oh, my God.
It's a what?
I'm sorry. No, go ahead.
It's not available because if you try it, you will die, your face will melt off, and your children will weep over your exploded body.
But it just... Seriously, if this look, Rick Emerson's not advocating illegal behavior, but if this isn't being done already, there needs to be a new kind of drug called Sheen. That's what they need to start calling the
least an energy drink.
Yeah, instead of calling
like Four Loko, ammonia, 2 tablespoons of cocaine, and a syringe of heroin just shot in there.
Yeah, it's like those kids on the corner. They're talking about, you know, I got your doomsday. There just needs to be a thing just called Sheen. Just not even Charlie Sheen, just Sheen. One word. It's like how we wanted them. Pancreatic cancer or whatever to be called Swayze's disease.
Yeah.
Because that would make it sort of awesome, you know, in a relative sense. If you got it, you could be like, you're battling Swayze's disease, you know, as only a man can truly battle. I do have, let's see, I think I've got a little bit of, I do have a little bit of Charlie Sheen sound, actually. By the way, Sheen said he hopes that his 5 kids ask him about all of the drug use one day so he can fill them in all of his epic stories. let's see if we've got this here. This is a little bit of Charlie Sheen. I do believe. We'll see if this wants to actually play. Don't forget, coming up later on this hour, we've also got the clue number one for the EH Vending Name That Snack contest. And we've got that. And we'll also get a little bit more of the Oscar sound from last night. And we've got Dawn Taylor's top five, the top five songs that Dawn Taylor uses to put herself into show mode. So that is all on the way. I think there may be some sort of a run on Sheen sound on the Intertron. I think everybody's trying to listen to it at once. So okay. We'll revisit this here in a few. Here's Dawn Taylor.
Corpse Watch.
Here is your Corpse Watch for Monday right here on the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
I'm digging up bones. I'm digging up bones. Exhuming things that's better left alone. I'm resurrecting memories of a love that's dead and gone. Yet tonight I'm sitting alone, digging up bones.
Here's Dawn Taylor with your Corpse Watch for Monday.
A man was found dead in Orlando, yes, Florida.
Excellent. There we go. Okay.
In his van, just a few feet away from the entrance to a Walmart, and police said he may have been there for days. Shoppers said they noticed Louis Ramirez living in his van in the South Sonoran Boulevard shopping plaza for several weeks. The 70-year-old was found slumped over the steering wheel around noon on Sunday. For the crowd that gathered and the few that had seen him before, it was tough to watch. Many were afraid they had watched him slowly starve to death.
So this is a guy who's just living in his vehicle in front of a Walmart. And people sort of, they walk by, they see, they register, they think, and then they just go back inside.
Right.
Okay.
A shopper said, I see him ducking down and he's got, like, clothes hung up inside his van. He thought he should go to a shelter or a hospital or something. It will be up to the medical examiner to try and figure out how Ramirez died, but the police don't suspect foul play. Yes, apparently he was living in his van. People kept seeing him living in his van. Then he was slumped over the steering wheel for several days.
But I mean, It really, I mean, everybody's up to the, like the people of Walmart, you know, thing and whatever. But I mean, honestly, when is the last time anybody here was at a Walmart? Because I was at one like 2 weeks ago. Anyone?
I've only ever been inside a Walmart once.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, you're missing out. You got to hear it's part of the it is part of the American cultural imperative. You have to go like every 6 months. If only you know what it is. You know what going to Walmart is? Going to Walmart is like when you have your iPhone or your laptop or anything, and like they tell you every now and again you got to drain the battery all the way down and then charge it and then drain it again and charge it, just so it recalibrates, so it resets. So the battery has it, so the battery has an accurate read on how much energy it has. You need to go to Walmart like once every 6 months so you can recalibrate your place in the social order of things and get a reasonable perspective on where you are in your life.
I mean, if I wanted to do that, I've also got the bus and laundromats.
Yeah, but see, the bus and the laundromat are just, I mean, that's like a beta version. I mean, that's just like your demo mode of the software before you've paid to fully unlock it. I mean, the Walmart is to your laundromat as, you know, as like Sim Planet is to having a little Tamagotchi on your keychain. I mean, it really is just, it's unreal. So I was there just a couple weeks ago, and it's like you just wonder, where are all those people from? I mean, it's easy to say, like, well, Clackamas. But I mean, honestly, it is like some wholly different yet somewhat related species, you know, that you don't get a window onto a lot of the time. I swear to God, a guy sent me a People of Walmart post, like, on Thursday or Friday. It was our listener, Aaron, in Orange County. And it was just a guy at Walmart who was walking around the consumer electronics section who clearly just had a huge load in his pants. I mean, obviously had just decided, like, should I go to use the bathroom because I have to move my bowels? No. Then I might miss out on buying this Deuce Bigelow European Gigolo box set that's just come out. I'll stay here and just excrete where I'm standing. And sure enough, and of course, he's in gray sweatpants because Walmart. And here's the thing about that. Those are kind of porous. They're not really like as, you know... That's a fibrous material through which things leach. And so he's just standing in line with DVDs and clearly just has he's just stool-tastic. And he's just standing there just like a human crock pot, just sort of simmering away. It's so awful. You don't get that at a laundromat.
Maybe
ride a Greyhound, you know, from like one big city to another, maybe like from Seattle to Oakland or something. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I'm telling you, you will really come away with a brand new and, dare I say, an improved perspective on your own existence.
Yeah, no, I literally have only ever set foot inside a Walmart once.
Yeah.
Patrick's work, he got a gift certificate as some kind of a bonus or something. I think it was like the second year we were married, and we went to it was the very first year we were married, because it was the very first DVD player we ever owned, and we went to Walmart because he got this $100 thing from Walmart, this gift card. And I said, well, I don't want to shop at Walmart. And I went, you know, we need a DVD player. I bet they have those at Walmart. And we went to Walmart, bought the DVD player, used the card, left. That was it. That's the only time I have ever been to Walmart.
Laura's parents, for some reason, every year, they give us a Walmart card for Christmas. You know, in addition to whatever else, there's also like $20 at Walmart. And the thing about $20 at Walmart is you could buy like half the store with $20.
You can buy a lot of Deuce Bigelow DVDs and Red Vines.
It just doesn't – I mean, it's like you see stuff there and you don't – I mean, I sort of understand intellectually that things are made overseas, you know, where the working conditions are shoddy and people are not paid a whole lot. But even so, when you consider the cost of packaging, shipping, marketing, advertising, stocking, the 17 people that have got to, you know, carry it from one place to another as it leaves China and ends up on the shelf, the idea that you can still buy a DVD player there for like $12 or something, it boggles the mind. It really does.
Well, it's like this $1 bag of cookies. I actually saw those. You were talking about
that. At
the
Plaid Pantry.
I saw them at
Checkers Cookie Company.
And I actually stood there for a few minutes and thought about buying one because I was fascinated by it. Because, yeah, it's a good size bag. And you pick it up, and then you realize, yes, it's only half full.
But still,
that's a lot of cookies for a dollar.
And they're not bad. I mean, they're not great, but they're not bad.
But you think to yourself, it's like, how do they do that? And the profit margin on that for the actual store has got to be negligible. They're
right.
Making like, what, 10 cents a bag or something. It's ridiculous. I don't know how it happens. They must be made of like floor scrapings and some kind of like leftover plastic or something for manufacturing.
They've got that little hint of political dissident.
Something, yeah.
The other thing about it is like the pricing structure of Plaid Pantry makes no sense because there's that, you know, that goddamn nonsense of like, when you go in to buy a cup of ice and it goes, I got to charge full price for that, $1.95. You know, and you're just like getting the cup with ice in it and the guy wants to charge you like the full. And yet again, the bag of cookies is a dollar. I mean, but the freaking bag has got to cost more than that.
Yeah, and then the freaky weird candy sales that they have on things sometimes where it's like, here's this giant 3-pound bar of chocolate or something, and right now they're on sale 3 for 79 cents, and it's very bizarre.
No, it's just insanity. Let's see. Before we do anything else here, we should just take a moment to say that the Rick Emerson Radio Program today and every day brought to you by a series of fine business partners as well as the humble generosity. No, wait. I'm the humble. Wait, let me back up. I'm humble because of the generosity of. It's a whole thing. You know, I think when Ryan actually walked in today, you said, how are you? And I. What did I even do? Did I even respond? Or did I just shrug?
Yeah.
You looked shaken.
Yeah. It's just.
I don't know what it was.
Don has a whole thing going on today because of. What is your thing?
I don't know.
Didn't you say this morning that you had a whole loop? Yeah, at the beginning of Legion of News, you said you had a whole thing going on today.
We talked about that whole deodorant thing, but I think...
No, it was like the first story out of the gate. I said, what...
Oh, it was just a Monday thing, I think. I stumbled.
You actually just stopped the story halfway through and you said, I'm not going to read this because I don't know what I'm doing today. And you just turned it face down and moved on.
That one story was just... It was just an error in judgment. Usually I'm pretty good about pacing and knowing, you know, start with a local story, maybe read another local story, read something national news, important news. And then later in the show... move on to things that are kind of like more opinion-y, a little bit more esoteric, things about economics or something like that, but they're not like hard news stories. And this time I just went to some kind of thing about, you know, the Wall Street Journal and internet privacy and stuff, and it just didn't fit and it didn't work. And so, like I said, I just decided to turn into the skid and just dump it before, like, you know, I killed everyone.
It's the longest answer to a question regarding a show that is not this one. Well, so I've got a little bit of that going on right now, apparently. By the way, somebody says, did you hear that Charlie Sheen likened his own blood to that of a cheetah?
No.
And then she says, in fact, he did say, quote, I have the blood of a cheetah. End quote.
I love him so much now.
I don't ever want him to end.
No.
Charlie Sheen's become, he's become my favorite video game, my favorite television show. He's my favorite reality program, my favorite.
It's like on the Oscars last night when Kirk Douglas first came out.
Oh my God.
I was like, oh God, he's so old and they bring him out and oh God, I feel so bad. And then when he just started screwing with everybody and just kept dragging it out. And, like, not actually reading the thing. And then I just kind of started to love him. And I started to go, he should present every award.
This is why they don't put me in charge of things, because I would just have everything hosted by him alongside Dick Clark. It would just be just the two of them side by side for, like, 6 hours in prime time.
Well, my thought last night, and I believe I tweeted this, was that I think that next year the Oscars should be hosted by Kevin Spacey and Hugh Jackman, who should both just wear straw boaters and do vaudeville routines, and then have Kirk Douglas give out every award.
Do you share my belief, and I think other people have made this observation, do you share my belief that it is just a matter of time until Justin Timberlake hosts the Oscars?
Oh, sure.
I mean, that's
a given.
I can
see that. Absolutely.
I mean, that guy's just going to end up running the planet at some point. That's a foregone conclusion. Well, in any event, blah, 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 blah. If your Oscar viewing experience was interrupted last night by, you know, your power going out, which apparently happened at 6,000 different homes.
And lucky them.
See, he doesn't have things.
Well, no. I mean, I would have loved the power to have gone out in the middle of my Oscar viewing. It was a pretty horrendous show.
If only you had a television on which to watch.
I have one still. They didn't take the old one.
You have a spare? You have a backup television?
I have a very bulky non-HD TV upstairs.
I'm not trying to minimize the your plight or the pain and suffering and anger and irritation of having your stuff burgled, but I got to say, if you're listening to us in another country right now, is why you want to be an American. We have backup televisions.
Yeah.
He is right, though. It's like probably the kindest thing that could have happened to you if you were watching the Oscars last night is your power would have gone out.
A friend of mine tweeted midway through, his friend is a sports columnist in Detroit, that it was so bad that he hoped that when they got to the death montage, he was in it.
Did they leave anybody really notable off the...
Eddie Fisher wasn't in it. Corey Haim. And the internet went crazy.
No Haim.
The internet went crazy as soon as they noticed there was no Corey Haim.
That's like last year when they left off goddamn Farrah Fawcett. They didn't put her on there, which makes no sense at all. Because there is, because you know what I did not realize, but I learned this morning, there's a cutoff point of 2 months prior to the ceremony. If you die, unless you're just a huge star. Unless you're just massive, if you die more than closer than 60 days to the ceremony, they bump you to the next year. It's like the best new artist or the best record thing or something. They just don't, because they said that otherwise the thing, because it actually was 80% longer than last year's. Last year was 3.5 minutes. This year was over 5 minutes long.
Well, they're all getting older.
That's the thing. Well, there's that whole like it's like that whole World War II era of actors. I mean, they're all just like teetering on the brink of. But, let me ask you this. Wait a minute. I didn't think you could watch actual television on your television. I thought you were just watching DVDs and stuff on your new TV. I didn't think you could get the actual television broadcasts on your new TV.
But I still have a television.
Oh, so you didn't watch last night on your big, huge...
She has a backup, too.
You have a backup television.
I watched it on my backup television.
Here's the thing. People say this is why they hate us. This is why everybody wants to be us. Backup TVs and pocket computers, done.
And something else that's interesting, and I, you know, why not? I'll say this publicly. This is interesting. I shouldn't even be getting television because I canceled it with Comcast.
And yet?
But I get, like, that they do my Wi-Fi, and we decided it's like we're barely getting television anyway, and I said we don't need it, and so it's like, you know, it's only like $12 a month we were paying for basic or something, but it's still coming in through the tubes.
Well, I'll tell you this, I'm not implying anything about anything, but I will say that proportionally speaking, we have a large penetration into the Comcast employee base. There is it's one of those things that happens sometimes. I think with anything, with radio, TV shows, or whatever, where it's like a coworker says, "Hey, I'm listening to this thing," and then that guy tells somebody else. Did I tell you that I actually called? I don't know if I told this on the air or not. I might have told you this off the air that I had some snafu with my Comcast thing a while back, and it's because it was an auto bill on a credit card that had lapsed. So it's nobody's fault, but just the credit card expires, and then when it goes to auto bill, it's not there, so they turn off my internet, and I'm like, well, what the hell? So I called Comcast, and the guy's like, "Oh yeah, your credit card expired. Like, give me the whatever." And I just gave him he identified me by my phone number and whatever, and it's, you know, nothing, no other identifying information. And at the end, he goes, "Okay, your service is going to be restored in about 5 minutes, and best show ever, bye." And he just hung up. It's the weirdest. It was just awesome. So anyway, what was my point? God damn. All right. Well, in any event.
Electricity.
Squank you. Thank you so much.
There we are.
Squires Electric, if you find that you are dealing with fallout, ramifications, upshots, consequences, following events from last night's, the power surge and the wind and the blowing and the hey, that first of all, you realize we should have just listened to Tesla by now and everything would just be coming out of like bulbs that you stuck in the ground around your house or something. But since we are not at that point in scientific evolution, you got to call Squires Electric if you get some sort of power issue, if you got issues with your wiring and with your, the Ethernet, your broadband. If you're going to be moving into a new business, you're going to be expanding your company. If you've got an inspection coming up, you want to make sure that you pass it with flying colors. They can make sure that all of that is handled and handled properly and handled the first time. So you're going to save yourself time and money. 503-252-1609. 503-252-1609. Free estimates. No job too small or too large. They've been in Portland for going on 13 years, and they're proud sponsors of the Rick Emerson radio program. That's SquiresElectric.com or 503-252-1609. So no fooling. Something goes wrong with your electrical system. You want to call those guys first and have them come out and take care of the issue so you don't have to worry about it. 503-252-1609. That is Squires Electric. We're here with Mr. Ryan White, music editor from the Oregonian. So what is a... apart from the various upheavals in your homeowner life, what is going on in your world, sir?
Clapton's here tonight.
Really?
Yeah.
God damn. I cannot track the number of things that I only know about because of you now. I don't know if it's because I'm getting old or if there's just so much stuff to keep track of, but it's like Social Distortion, the new Drive-By Truckers record, and now Clapton. I wouldn't have known about those things if you hadn't told me.
I think it's okay if Clapton sneaks up on you. Kind of snuck up on me, too. I didn't realize that it was today until midway through last week.
Where's he? Is he at the Rose Garden?
Yeah.
So is he got a new record out, or is he just touring because he's Clapton?
No, he does, and it's been largely well-received, and I tried listening to it and hated every minute of it. It was... He tried to make a New Orleans record, and he put a lot of great New Orleans artists on it, but it sounds like he should be arrested for trespassing.
Really? Is it just a...
It just sounds like Kenny G doing Eric Clapton doing a New Orleans record.
Well, I'm trying to remember the last truly good Clapton song or record, and I think for me it's got to be, I think like the Rush soundtrack is the last thing he did that I really enjoyed. And even that, I can't sit around and listen to a lot.
You know, I hope it's a good show tonight. I'm going. So, I once upon a time really, really loved Clapton. So.
Well, and that's the thing. Is like, I can't knock him. I mean, he's Eric Clapton. He's God and I'm not. So
yeah, he's pretty damn cool.
Yeah, but, I mean, Clapton's one of those guys who doesn't have anything left to prove to me or anybody else. It would be nice if he continued to turn out. But it's like Billy Corgan said about people always pushing Brian Wilson to record new stuff. He's like, you know, like what else does he need to do? Like he's not your monkey.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting. I'm looking forward to that new Lady Gaga video. I saw that it was out. I saw that she talks about the birth of a new race, and this is somewhat graphically depicted in the video, and she's still got those fake pointy shoulders. And I scanned through the comments on like Entertainment Weekly's website, and they were talking about, at the 5:10 mark, and I was like, I don't have 5 minutes and 10 seconds for Lady Gaga today. And I looked over, and I had the new Lucinda Williams record sitting on my desk, and I was like, I think it's more of a Lucinda day than a Lady Gaga day. So,
yeah, well, and plus you know that the Gaga stuff is going to be inescapable sooner rather than later anyway, because it'll be in every commercial in every film trailer you see.
Yeah. So, you know, you can go to the Oregon Live Music website and find the link to the Lady Gaga video if you want to watch that.
If that's the sort of thing you need to do.
I didn't have the energy to deconstruct it today.
Well, there was at one point, somebody was, I don't know if, I think this might have ended up being some sort of a publicity stunt that Clear Channel was pulling, but there was a few years back, maybe 5 years ago, there was this online radio station that launched, and I forget how long it actually ran. I think it may have been some sort of a stunt, but it was called like Blip FM or something. And the deal was that they took it was all like your basic pop songs, but the deal was it was all edited down to where no song was longer than 90 seconds. It was just the opening, the hook, like half of the second stanza, the hook, and it was done. And it was astonishing how often you would just not even notice the difference. That it was just like, especially with stuff that was just, it was very like CHR, very top 40 oriented, where you listen to it and you kind of go, that's great. And you kind of have it on the, because it's music that you're not listening to. You're not scanning it for nuance. It is. And I don't say this as a knock, because there is a purpose to music that is simply an enjoyable background to your life. And you would just sort of, and it would flow from one song to another, and you would never notice. Here's something I can reveal, actually. I don't know if we've ever actually said this on the air. So it doesn't really matter. I guess there's no point in me not saying it now. We never mentioned this, and I think people probably figured it out at one point. But during the whole kerfuffle at KUFO when we were there, and there was that whole thing where it was like first it was going to be no music, and then it was like 2 songs an hour. And then we started to dig our heels a little bit, and then it was like 4, and then it was 6, and then we pushed it back to 2, and then they threatened to fire us, and then we agreed to play 4 again, and then we cut it back to 2, and then they threatened to fire us again more loudly that time, and so the deal that we finally agreed on, and we never really told anybody about this, we just sort of did it, is that because we had this thing of like they wanted us to play, it was either 4 or 6 songs an hour, which was just like untenable, like. You know, even 4 songs an hour was just not tenable for us. It was just like something was going to be. So Greg Nibbler and I just started every night. We would scan the music because here's a little secret, kids. They don't really take your requests at radio stations. They just play the same crap they were already going to play. So we knew the night before. So we would just, Greg and I would go in the night before and we would get the playlist for the next day and we would take all of the songs we were going to play and we would edit them so no song was longer than about 85 seconds. and if you go back and listen, not that I imagine that you would do this, but if you go back and listen to any of the KUFO shows, starting about a month in, all of the songs, doesn't matter what it was. I mean, it's like we would take like some 7-minute Tool song and it would be 90 seconds by the time we were done. And I got to say, we had very, very few comments about that. People comment about everything else and whether it was good or bad or whatever. I can count on like less than one hand that people went, wait a minute, that song's supposed to be longer than that. And it's just because people just didn't notice because it's if you do it right and if you do those radio edits correctly, people don't really, you know. So I'm
And if it's that kind of music.
Yeah.
So.
And so with the Gaga thing, like I am surprised that somebody hasn't sprung up to do that as like some sort of a, you know, hey, we know you're busy, you don't have time to hear the new Lady Gaga record. Here, now you can hear the whole thing in 7 minutes. Somebody should do that. That is a service that would actually. I mean, I know that it sounds like horrible, and I know that as a music fan, I shouldn't endorse that kind of a thing. But I'm just saying, it's like, it's a busy world, you know. Well, whatever.
It's pop music.
Yeah,
I remember when I was talking to Colin Malloy for the Decemberist story. He was talking about with like all of the. The efforting done by the record company on the last record, on The Hazards of Love, to get something that they could put on radio or send to radio. And you know, so they were trying to take the last song on the record, which is really like 3 songs, which was about 8.5 minutes mm-hmm. long, and edit them down to, and they just kept sending it. He goes, they kept sending them over and over, and I would be like, bless you guys for trying, but no, there's no way I'll ever approve that.
Right.
And,
right.
And that would be something where you could tell.
Well, it really is amazing, actually, some of the songs that have had that done to them over the years, because I was working at a top 40 station when the Use Your Illusion records came out, and I remember playing, and it's like, and the record company, I mean, they just, look, and I understand that, as somebody once said, it's not show art, it's show business, and I get that, but it's like, you realize that there are just these fat bastards who just have, like, no conscience about these things whatsoever. When I would get, like, a 3.5-minute version of November Rain sent to me that they wanted me to play, and it's just stupid. It's just ridiculous. The same thing with that I Would Do Anything for Love, which is an 11-minute song, and there was some guy whose job it was to get it. Can I just tell you this? I own at home. This is from an earlier era. This is from the 60s when this sort of thing was even more rampant. I own at home, I swear to God. And it was the version that they sent to radio stations, because I'm not like a hardcore collector or anything, but I do collect like radio station 45s if I come across them. The 45 of Inagata De Vida that they sent out to radio stations, because that was in what, like 68 maybe, something like that?
Probably.
65? Couldn't have been any later than 68. But, you know, that Inagata De Vida is like a 19-minute song or something. I mean, it's like the entire side. It's the entire second side of the Inagata De Vida record. But that was at that changeover period where there's like radio. It was that Don Kirshner era. Radio didn't quite realize that the times were a-changing, and they still wanted to cram it on next to like the Archies and the Cowsills and the whatever. And so some poor bastard had to sit there in a split, you know, with like a razor blade and tape, and cut Inagata De Vida down to 2 minutes and 45 seconds, which is what it is. It's amazing. I'll bring it in actually and play it at some point. It's hilarious to listen to. And
wow.
That some guy's job was on the line. They went, we need it to be 2:45, you know, and it's like, how would you even, you know, it's staggering.
I can't get another 10 seconds.
Yeah. Let's get to the top five here. And like, let me do this actually. Before we do the top five, I will actually get to the clue number one for this week's Name That Snack contest here on the Rick Emerson Radio Program, brought to you by EH Vending at ehvending.com. We will reveal first and foremost the winner from last week's Name That Snack contest, followed by the first clue for this week. Of course, is brought to you by EH Vending. Find out more about them by going to ehvending.com. That is ehvending.com. You can also call them if you're in Vancouver. You can call them at 360-816-1853, or in Portland, 503-897-8204. Or again, ehvending.com. If you find your vending company or the vending company you deal with is charging what you believe to be an unacceptable rate, or if you have been trying to get a vending service for your new business, but you find that they're turning your way because they don't have enough outlets, they want you to have 5 or 6 or 7 stores as a minimum, or if you just want to pursue your options and just see if something else that's more affordable is out there. If you want to perhaps save a little bit of money on your vending so that you can put that toward raises in healthcare for your many, many employees, EH Vending can help you do that. That is ehvending.com. Everything from regular soda and snack machines all the way to coffee services and full refrigeration services for your business, your deli, your whatever. Find out more by going to ehvending.com or 360-816-1853. Oh, my God. You know what I just found sitting at the house today? And I don't know where this is from. It probably belonged to my wife, but, you know, but sort of a finder's keeper sort of thing. You know, it was just sitting on the counter today for no readily apparent reason, was one of those peanut butter Snickers bars.
Oh.
It was just, I didn't buy it. It was just sitting there.
Maybe she left it for you special because she loves you.
See, probably not. The thing is, that's sort of an early bird and worm scenario there. And it was like God himself had just appeared and had just left it on the counter for me. It's just a small kiss from the universe to start my day. It was glorious. It really was. Anyway, so you can contact EH Vending at ehvending.com or 360-816-1853, 503-897-8204. Last week's winner, Vicky, was the winner from last week. Listener Vicky, last week's snack, Dawn Taylor, was?
I don't remember.
The final clue was Robert Downey Jr.?
Oh, it had something to do with peanuts.
It was, in fact, Planters Peanuts.
Planters Peanuts.
Planters Peanuts, the snack from last week. So we'll give you
I don't understand some of the clues, by the way.
Well, but see, that's why they're called clues.
Okay. What was the...
it would be called an answer otherwise.
No, but I mean, what was the something of 49? What was that?
Oh, 34 of 44?
Yeah.
39 of 44? It was a Jimmy Carter reference, because he was a peanut farmer.
Okay.
In Plains,
okay.
Georgia. So yeah, 39 of 44.
An immigrant?
I don't know. That's something Cheryl said.
Oh.
That was like her.
Like Mr. Peanut is foreign because he wears a monocle?
Well, I think he is British, is he not?
It has to be.
Yeah.
Robert Downey Jr. is doing his voice, though, and he's not British.
Does he do it in a British accent?
No.
Well, I guess you don't have to have an accent to be a foreigner.
That's true.
You just have to, you know.
He could be Canadian.
Here's the thing about foreigners, don't sometimes they look and sound just like the rest of us. That's what makes them so dangerous. they blend in silently, and then they control the weather. Anyway, here's your first clue. We'll give out the fifth clue this coming Friday once we have done that. Once clue number five is given out this Friday, if you're the first person to quickly identify the snack via snack@rickemerson.com, that is snack@rickemerson.com, you want a heaping bag full of consumable goodness from E.H. Vending. That is from E.H. Vending. Clue number one is square. That is clue number one.
You know what it is?
Clue number one is square. That is the first clue from the E.H. Vending Name That Snack Contest. So, all right, so there you go. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. And now, without further ado, ladies and gentle folk, will you please turn your attention to Don Taylor.
4, 3, 2, 1, fire.
Counting is wonderful. Counting is marvelous.
Nah,
it's the best thing to do. Counting is happiness. Counting is ecstasy. I love to count, don't you?
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. And so this was inspired because I came in the other day and you were listening to the Electric Light Orchestra.
Yes.
And I said, what is up with that? And you revealed that you've been feeling a little down, a little blue, a little morose.
Yeah, well, in some days I'm just, you know, some mornings you're a little less energetic. You're a little... a little more brain foggy than others.
What mornings might those be, Don?
Just about 3 days a week. Okay. You just randomly pick them.
Okay.
But, you know, the caffeine hasn't quite kicked in. Or for whatever reason, I'm just not quite in that place I need to be a fine underhost to you, Rick Emerson.
Okay.
So I have found that music helps kind of pump me up into the correct frame of mind to be where I need to be for the show.
So these are the top five. These are the top five songs slash artists in some cases that put you in the proper frame of mind to provide broadcast genius to the people.
Yes.
All right.
So our the honorable mention is the Ramones. We're a happy family.
Well done.
And the thing is, it could be any number of Ramones songs. Also, see Social Distortion. It's just something that gets me in that energetic, alert place I need to be.
Now, did you notice that we did all Ramones music between Legion of News and Rick Emerson show today? Yeah, for no readily apparent reason. I love the Ramones.
Yes.
God damn.
So, yeah, so that's one of the things. I will make my way to work some mornings with my Ramones Pandora station going, which will also give me, like, Buzzcocks and The Clash.
Yeah.
And that'll kind of be blasting into my ears on my way into work, and that gets me in the place I need to be.
It's so weird. I was just driving around yesterday, and I was listening to just sort of Ramones mix on my iPhone, and I think it was, like, Psychotherapy or something that came on. And I mean, and I love the Ramones, but it was no matter how much you love a band, there's sometimes those moments where you just, it's like you realize all over again. You just get that moment of just like perfect serendipity where it's like you just get a little extra burst of recognition into why they're so great. And you stop and everything sort of seems to halt in the universe while you just listen to the song and you realize, you know, what a fantastic band or artist it is.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And it does bear noting, I mean, other people have made this observation, but the Ramones should have run out of songs that they were able to make or create out of effectively the same beat and the same handful of chords, like an album and a half in.
Yeah.
I mean, not unlike AC/DC. I mean, it really seems like, just mathematically speaking, they shouldn't have been able to write anything new after the first record or two. These are Don Taylor's top five put you in show mode songs.
Number five is Iggy Pop, Lust for Life.
Well done. God, what a huge sound, even now.
I love a lot of Iggy Pop. I don't love a lot of Iggy Pop, but this song is one of my favorite songs, like, ever.
I believe this song is what they refer to as an instant classic. again, a group of guys, you know, who by all rights should not have been as great as they were.
No, yeah.
I mean, that's... I think it was Lester Bangs or somebody was talking about the song Gimme Danger. And when they get to that weird middle eight, that weird bridge that happens like halfway through the song, and he says, you know, you realize at that moment they are just circling so high above the earth in the stratosphere that these burnouts from Michigan should have no ability to play at. There's no reason they should be able to write and sing this well and perform this well, and yet they are somehow.
There was a documentary about the Stooges that was part of the Real Music Film Festival, was it 2 months ago or whatever, and it was, my only complaint with it was that it was only 45 minutes long, and I wanted about another 45 minutes and, you know, more in-depth stuff. And but, you know, they had Iggy sitting at the board, you know, playing with mixes and, right. And you know, going back through the songs, and Iggy tells good story.
Oh, yeah. There's, well, what was, and I forget his name, the guitarist who just died. The same thing.
They're from my hometown. I should know this by heart.
I went to see, of all things, about a year and a half ago, I went to see Creepshow on the big screen at the Baghdad. And it was one of those things where, like, between the previous film and Creepshow, which started at midnight, they were just showing just a bunch of, like, random crap, including the Red Hot Chili Peppers playing in Berlin, which is, like, in 1988, which is the worst thing that I'd ever seen in my life. It was just terrible. But I came in about 15 minutes to the end of some little documentary about the Stooges that I'd never seen, and there was no identifying information at the end of it. Like, I was never able to figure out what it was. But most of it was just an interview with that guy, that guitarist, and just sitting in his, you know, in his basement in Detroit. And it was just... And he was doing the thing of, like, demonstrating his guitar tone or whatever, and he said, well, I'll... And he did that great thing that I never, ever tire of in music documentaries, where he's just sitting there and he's smoking and he's going, well, so then we went into the studio and, you know, we still needed one song for the record or whatever, and so I just said, well, I got this thing I've been screwing around with, and, I'll show you. And he just... And while the camera's still rolling, he just leans over and flips on his amp, and you get that great, like, and he picks up his guitar, and he's just demonstrating how he, like, created the guitar tone for some song, like, you know, like the Raw Power album or something. And it's just, you know, and it's just, and even just coming off the screen at the Baghdad, it's like the loudest thing you've ever heard in your life. So,
It gets me to where I'm ready to do the show. Or heroin.
Yes. Isn't this like, didn't they use it for Carnival Cruise Lines or something recently?
Yes, God awesome. Damn them.
Well, that's
yes.
Like how they use, like...
Jim Rome also uses this.
Jim Rome does use this. And I love stuff, but it's like there's some children's charity in Britain, and they just raise money for it by having, like, an all-star performance of, including Children's Choir of Perfect Day by Lou Reed, also about heroin, I believe. These are Don Taylor's top five songs to get in show mode.
Number four, Lily Allen, Not Fair.
Now, I don't think I know this song.
Lily Allen, I've come late to kind of... I've been trying to listen to more girl pop because I realized that I...
He treats me with respect. He says he loves me all the time. He calls me 15 times a day. He
is this about Rick? Make sure that I'm
fine. You know, we don't like to talk about it.
Man who's made me feel quite so secure. He's not like all them other boys. They're all so dumb and immature. That's just one thing.
I know almost nothing by Lily Allen. I kind of know whatever her radio singles were.
Yeah, Lily Allen, I don't really know a lot of her discography. I've just really started picking up some stuff and listening to her lately. She strikes me, just with my own ignorance of the music industry in general, she strikes me as being a lot of what Katy Perry thinks she is.
Right.
Only Lily Allen does it a whole lot better.
Well, there was that thing where Lily Allen and Amy Winehouse seemed to come out at around the same time. And I think I just got distracted by Amy Winehouse because she was, like, whatever.
It was a far bigger wreck.
Yeah, and it was sort of a Blur Oasis thing where they were sort of competing for attention at the same time. And I just don't think I followed up on listening to more of Lily Allen stuff. I like this a lot.
Yeah.
That kind of a Johnny Cash beat behind it.
Yeah, and I, you know, and that thing of having something that sounds like a contemporary production of something from 1958, is a thing that it's hard to do, but when you do it well, it's fantastic.
This has like one of the most adorable music videos too, with her on like a little soundstage, like, you know, with like sort of a little faux 1950s cowboy band, looking like she's on like the old like. Who is the guy with Dolly Parton?
Porter Wagner.
Porter Wagner. Like, she's on the old Porter Wagner show. It's really adorable.
Awesome. These are Don Taylor's top five songs for achieving show mode.
Number three, Dear Tick, Art Isn't Real. Parenthetically something. But yes, art isn't real. And this is just a representative song from Dear Tick. They have like three albums, and I just really love them.
I don't think I know.
They're great.
They're kind of a, I don't know. They're sort of a precursor to the Averitt Brothers in a way. Their first album was 2007, and
they're I'm not quite sure how you peg them in there. They're not really kind of an alt country, but there's some elements of that. They're wonderful drunks.
They end up being
They destroyed Mississippi Studios when they played there for Music Fest Northwest a couple of years ago.
Awesome.
When they came out, John McCauley, the singer, came out on stage in just a kilt with his guitar and said, "So do y'all like Townes Van Zandt or do you suck?" And played White Freightliner Blues. They cut a check to Mississippi Studios after that show, I heard.
Yeah, they end up being called like indie folk a lot, but right. There's a lot more rock and a lot more country in there than that implies. I'm still hanging round and round. Sometimes it's a racket, but lately not a sound. And this is off their album War Elephant, which is from 2007.
They got McCauley, the singer's got a record coming out, the band called Middle Brother. That's him, the singer from Dawes, and the singer from Delta Spirit. Kind of all three of the main songwriters for those bands got together.
And I like the vocals a lot. The vocals have kind of got that sharp, sort of tightly compressed sound. I can pick up for it. Which again almost makes it sound like it's, you know, like you're listening to something from 1966.
And he's the constant in this band. He's like the one guy. It's one of those bands where it's him, and then it's been a rotating catalog of other guys.
Sort of the
Mike
Ness kind of thing, yeah. These are Don Taylor's top five songs for achieving show mode.
Number two, which you heard me sing, listening to the other morning, Yellow, Mr. Blue Sky.
This has always been so perfect for any movie montage involving somebody getting up. Probably Steve Carell.
This song
is the best one-line description I have ever heard of any Yellow song, ever.
This song never, just never fails to cheer me up.
The bag of groceries on the back of his Vespa.
Walking down the street, giving a little tip of the hat to the grocer.
Maybe a bird flies over and lands on his shoulder briefly.
And I gotta say, ELO brings up something interesting that I was talking to somebody about. I think I was talking about like the new My Chemical Romance record or something, which is not great, but has some moments that I really, really like. And, you know, they're just the worst band live. I mean, they're just terrible. I've seen My Chemical Romance, I think, maybe twice. But certainly the last time I saw them, and the experience of everybody I know who's seen that band has been the same, that they are awful live. Because their records are these sort of very, very layered, very elaborate, very, like, studio-constructed albums. But the reason I bring that up is because ELO is sort of on a different level, obviously, but I have no issue with bands that are studio creations or bands that you know couldn't possibly pull it off live. Mm-hmm. And this is, maybe you listen to this, and there's no way you would go see this live and have it sound like this. Just like with people who went to see Boston, you know, when that first record came out, and if you talk to anybody who saw Boston on their first tour, and they would just talk about how disappointed they were that it didn't sound like their record, and there's just no way. Because it's a totally different. And I like to think that over the years, especially post the emergence of hip-hop, that studio artistry has become recognized. And I mean, really, the Beatles should have been the final nail in that coffin, that studio artistry is no longer sort of bastardized, yeah. or it's no longer put into some sort of a ghetto. Wow. Don Taylor's top five songs to obtain show mode.
Number one.
Really?
Me First in the Gimme Gimmes.
Oh,
Walking on Sunshine.
Okay, because all I saw was the title. All right.
No, I don't like the original version of the song. I love this version of this song.
The judges will allow it because of the Me First in the Gimme Gimmes. Anything is better when done by this band. Well done, Don Taylor. So my wife actually introduced me to this band however long ago, 10 years ago or something like that. And there was this period in our house, I don't know, for probably a month or so, where 98% of the time, if there was music playing, it was Me First and the Gimme Gimmes. Because they've got like 1,000 albums out. I mean, it's like every song you know, there's probably a version by this band. Awesome. The Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon, at the news desk, Don Taylor. Advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa. We want to thank our guests, including Aaron Duran of GeekInTheCity.com and Ryan White. Read him in print in the Oregonian or online at OregonLive.com/music. Coming up tomorrow, we will have, I'll present my same version of this list, the top five songs Rick Emerson uses to obtain show mode. We'll also get Penis Watch tomorrow, and maybe a Darwin Watch if we can track it down. I might tell the vomit story tomorrow, I might not. We'll have to wait and see. After a brief musical interlude, we'll have an encore of the day's Legion of News episode, followed by an encore of this very fine radio program. The Rick Emerson Show is made possible by a generous grant from y'all, so thank you for that. We thank you kindly, and please continue to spread the word. It never goes unappreciated. It is Monday, February 28th, 2011, and that is The Frequency. Kenneth, as always, thank you for listening. Be safe. See y'all tomorrow. Bye now.
Listening to the Emerson News Network.